You have become much known among our people, almost a legend.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled. Superman, Batman and Robin, Wonder Woman,
the Green Lantern,
and
the Flash.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Hello and welcome to our 150th episode of Third Degree Burn. My name is Brian Hughes and I am here with a great collection of, what would you call them, August personages? That's pretty bad. Anyway, we got a great show for you today and we got here with us Tim Elliott. Say hi, Tim.
Hello.
We got Nigel Spink. Say hi, Nigel.
Hello. Hello.
Kurt Greenfield.
Good evening, folks.
And towing up the end, we've got my boy, Christopher Hughes.
Hello.
And what are we covering today? Tim, do you want to tell us what we're going to cover?
I'd be happy to, Brian. We thought for our 150th episode, we'd do something kind of special. So we are covering Legends issues 1 through 6. We're covering the entire miniseries.
That's awesome. I'm really excited about this. And I still can't fathom the idea that we've done 150 regular episodes. I mean, we've done a lot more, actually, with the specials and comics and cocktails, coffee and cocktails.
Yeah, if you count those, we're at 218, I think.
Wow.
So
just amazing. And here we are on the final stretch for our 10th year. And boy, have we got something special planned for our 10th year. I can't wait. Can't wait to really talk about it, but we still got some planning to do. But I guess without any further ado, let's get into this. Yeah. Who's going to start off? Who's got issue 1?
I have issue number 1.
Okay. And now, do we have a cowbell or a goat or anything to let us know when we're running over?
I can get a cowbell if you want.
Kirk will get his cowbell.
You're pretty hot on the gun there.
Well,
but okay.
Okay, before I get in, we'll do this really quickly. I'll roll round robin here. Briefly, as we go around the table here, tell us about how you first read Legends. Did you read it off the rack? Did you read it later? That kind of thing. And, you know, what your first experiences with it were. So we'll start with you, Brian.
This was just part of that John Byrne heaven that was going on back in 86 with Man of Steel, I guess, wrapping up or finished. And all of a sudden, here's another series of Byrne books coming out along with Superman and Action Comics and everything else that Byrne was touching, Fantastic Four, which I guess had wrapped up at this point in time. But it was just like Byrne heaven. So I got it off the shelves. When was it coming out, every 2 weeks?
I think it was monthly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Just the way that it was reading on the chronology. But yeah, so I got every issue as it came out and was just enjoying it. Because this is the first time we saw Carl Kiesel. Is it Kiesel or Kessel?
I always thought it was Kessel.
Yeah, I'll call it Kessel. It's the first time we saw his inks on Byrne, and it was, in my mind, just as good as Terry Austin.
Nice. Nigel, how about you?
Oh, okay. Bit different for me, because, yeah, say, in 86, when Byrne went over to DC, of course, I wasn't a DC reader. And Superman wasn't necessarily my favorite sort of character. So I didn't buy his stuff with DC to begin with. But it was a friend of a friend, actually, who brought to my attention this Legends. They were talking about Legends and how, and it was drawn by Byrne and it was great. And I said, oh, I didn't know anything about it. So somebody lent me an issue of it to have a look at, and that it actually, it was issue number 6 that they let me have a look at. So I kind of, I saw the end bit of the story. But yeah, I was like, oh, this is really good. And then when I realized it was a mini series, you know, so it's not an ongoing thing that I had to start trying to collect. So then I started getting the back issues, and so I picked it up that way. Yeah. But as I say, that's the only thing I bought with regards to the stuff he was doing at DC at that time. I still didn't bother buying any of the Superman or Action Comics.
Interesting.
I don't know. I've started collecting them sort of like in the last year or so. Yeah.
Kirk, was this, were you still reading comics when this came out?
Yes. Again, as Brian said, it was in the middle of Byrne's heyday in the 80s. And so I would have followed him from Marvel over to DC. And I would imagine that I was probably receiving them in my pull. I don't have a clear memory of this series. I know essentially what it's supposed to be doing. But it, you know, when it was proposed, I couldn't recall exactly what the story beats were. So in refreshing my chapter for tonight's presentation, I got a better flavor for it. But I have not read it since it initially came off the shelves in the comic shop. And I do recall that it basically was the run-up or the setup for a new incarnation of the Justice League. Spoiler there if you weren't already aware of that. But I recall reading in, it's probably the collected first 7 or 8 issues of the Justice League, the editor's comments about how that title came to be. And that title follows these 6 issues in this miniseries. And I recall him saying that he was constantly being visited or bugged by an artist creator, whose name I don't recall, but every time he would pop past the office, he'd stick his head around the corner and say, Justice League, trying to plant the seed. And he'd always say, yeah, we'll, you know, maybe we'll get to it. And then he was ready for him finally as he came around the corner one day. And he said it again, Justice League. And he says, you got it? It starts in 6 months. You know, go. So I imagine they must have had the plan for Legends in place already, or were just about to unveil it, because they obviously knew where they were headed with this story and how it was going to feed into that ongoing series. So that's my background.
Well, this is right on the heels of Crisis ending.
It's yeah.
Like within months. Mine's similar to yours, Kirk. I was a Marvel guy, and then when Byrne jumped to DC, I followed him with Man of Steel, and then this came out, so I just started reading this. So this is my introduction to many of the DC characters that are not the prime, like Superman, Batman, The Flash, those kind of things. I know those guys from Super Friends, but some of these more obscure characters, this is my first introduction, first time I ever knew anything about Darkseid. From there, so that's why I picked it up. I just picked it up off the rack as I was reading the rest of it. But I was picking up his Action Comics and anything else he was doing DC, so I was picking those up at the same time. How about you, Chris?
I'm afraid I've got all of y'all beat. About an hour ago. My dad decided to give me of almost full breakdown of the little mini series here, and kind of read it to me, and that was my introduction to Legends.
That's then just gonna be fresh in your mind, then, isn't it? Freshly impression. Anything else?
Yeah. Cool. Now, from those that don't know, I mean, this is kind of born from Secret Wars. When Marvel put out Secret Wars, it was like the first kind of cross-company event and it was major. It had great comic sales and also toy sales. And the next year, or the year after that, DC did Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was a year-long event. That's why Legend seems to come on it so closely. Fact is, there was a History of the DC Universe that Marv Wolfman and George Perez did, two-issue prestige format, that came out between Crisis and Legends. And just as Man of Steel was coming out also. And so this right here is just like the next event, because it crossed over into virtually all the books, even books like Warlord, which takes place on Skartaris, its own little world inside the DC universe. But it was just like the next big event, crossover event, and it did have almost as much gravitas as, say, Crisis. But after this one, the events just kind of dropped in quality and buy-in from the various books. Because the next year is when we got the Manhunters with, what was that called? What was the Millennium?
I
thought that Legends was a real good follow-up to Crisis. But again, when you've got John Byrne drawing all these various characters and just putting his own stamp on them, characters like Guy Gardner and Captain Marvel and Dr. Fate and Blue Beetle, it was just really awesome to see that. Then of course, the costume of Black Canary, which is a jazzercise kind of thing. But that was popular in the X-Men, too. They were all wearing dance skins and such instead of actual costumes. But now you look at Black Canary, and she's back to the black fishnets. Thank goodness.
Well, this is and I guess I didn't realize when I was first reading this, was because it comes on the heels of Crisis, this really is the starting point, and it's kind of a jumping starting point or jump-in point for readers like me, who weren't familiar with DC, and this is starting, they'd reset the DC universe, and this is kind of starting it, because a lot of this series led into a bunch of new books. So it's kind of it's like a backdoor pilot for all these books that they're going to launch.
It's really weird, because when they did Crisis, it was meant to be the reboot, to create that one universe from which all the heroes and characters would come from. And it took them another year and a half to get Superman off the ground, and Wonder Woman for that matter. Batman's reboot, if anything, was a soft reboot, and they really continued his stories going on. Guy Gardner had got introduced into Green Lanterns during Crisis, but he had been around before.
I know a lot of this stuff is kind of, you point, it's a soft reboot where they don't, their backstory seems to exist pre-Crisis, post-Crisis, and others have been wiped clean, and they've started all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then they just brought in guys like Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, and who's the other one?
The Charlton characters, right?
The Charlton characters.
Yep. Incorporated all those. Cool. Yep. All right, well, I'm going to do issue one. Let's get started, because we do have a lot of books to cover here. All right.
If y'all want a real good digital copy of this, you can actually get a Kindle version of it on Amazon.com. So you can read it on your computer or tablet or whatever. And it is a really good transfer.
Nice. Yeah, I'm reading scans. So it's nice to see the original work, but I'm sure it's not as nice as a cleaned up digital copy. Okay, Legends number one. It says a cover price of 75 cents, back when comics were affordable. This breaks down as our plotter is John Ostrander, and our writer is Lynn Wein. Our penciler is John Byrne. Our inker is Carl Kessel. Our colorist is Thomas Zluko. Letter is Steve Haney. John Byrne does a cover art. Our editor is Mike Gold, and our editor-in-chief is Dick Giordano. This had a release date of August 28th, 1986, with a cover date of November 1986. Our other burned books at the time were Batman 401. He did the cover art. Doomsday Squad. Doomsday Squad number 4. It's a reprint. Marvel Fan Pharaoh number 29. He was a writer artist. I think we've covered that one. That's the Hulk story.
That's the Hulk. Yeah.
All splash page story.
Mm-hmm.
Man of Steel number 3 and number 4 came out, and he was writer artist on that. And,
yeah, that's coming out every 2 weeks.
Yeah. And Vigilante number 35. He did the cover art. This
don't
is only
get
been
a hot move.
I didn't have that on my list, so I don't know if Mike's was incorrect on that, but I didn't have Ohatmu at all on mine.
Yeah, because in Ohatmu, he had done Grumald loved to use his artwork in there. And it just plastered all over the place.
Yeah. This is reprinted in Legends trade paperback, reprinted in 93, then they did a 30th anniversary in 2016. Legends number 1. Story is entitled Once Upon a Time. Darkseid stands in his throne room on Apocalypse, admiring his own tyranny. Despite this, he is unsatisfied. Desaad suggests that it is because the heroes of Earth still defy him. Desaad believes that the people of Earth are inspired by their legends, and he must destroy these legends to make them more compliant. Dr. Bedlam and Glorious Godfrey are called in as his agents. They began preparing techno seeds for an attack that Darkseid calls Operation Humiliation. Darkseid remarks that when he is done, the only legend left on Earth will be his own. Janet Clyburn and Martin Stein are working on the Hudson Nuclear Facility run by Star Labs in New York City. The facility is struck by a techno seed which burrows deep into the heart of the generator. It absorbs all the power in the building, turning it into a giant living monster called Brimstone. Brimstone declares he is a fallen angel and goes on a destructive rampage. Martinstein calls on Ronnie Raymond at Vandermeer University so they can combine as a superhero firestorm. This disappoints Ronnie, who was in the shower before a date with Doreen Day. Firestorm's energy blasts have no effect, and his nuclear power doesn't work because the creature is living. Brimstone declares that he has come to rid the world of false gods, and Firestorm will be the first. Firestorm goes to find backup. Deadshot tries to rob a bank on Wall Street, but he is stopped by Wally West as the Flash. West is haunted by bystanders comparing him to the previous Flash, his deceased mentor Barry Allen. Returning home to Titan's Tower, Wally finds Changeling watching reporter Billy Batson on TV. Interview is with a pundit named G. Gordon Godfrey, who is declaring that superheroes are a public menace. Wally tells Changing that he is worried he cannot live up to the legend of the Flash. Despite this, he refuses to change his name because he won't let the legend die. There's a blackout at WHIZ TV station, and Billy Batson goes to investigate. Batson speaks the magic word Shazam, and a bolt of magical lightning transforms into the fully grown superhero, Captain Marvel. It is revealed that Gordon Godfrey is actually Glorious Godfrey, and he engineered this. The studio is terrorized by a giant villain who calls himself Macroman. Captain Marvel attacks Macroman, but Macroman holds him in a powerful grip. To escape this grasp, Captain Marvel speaks the word Shazam to become Billy Batson again. The magical lightning bolt strikes Macroman, setting him afire and killing him. Billy Batson is horrified to realize that he accidentally murdered someone. In the Pentagon, Colonel Rick Flagg is called in to see Amanda Waller of Task Force X. Flagg had himself assigned to Task Force X, but he is shocked by Waller's plans for the program. Waller explains that he does not care about his feelings as long as he gets the job done. Flagg tells her that no man on Earth could do the job better, and he has never allowed his personal feelings to get in the way of his duty. Waller tells him that Task Force X might be needed sooner than they thought. Cosmic Boy has lunch in a 20th century diner, on vacation from his home in the 30th century. Designer is destroyed by Brimstone on his rampage. Cosmic Boy tries to battle Brimstone by using his magnetic powers to create a giant cage. This does not work because Brimstone instantly evaporates metal on contact. Cosmic Boy is thrown to the ground. Firestorm finally arrives with help, having called in the Justice League of America. This group includes Elongated Man, Gypsy, Martian Manhunter, Steel, Vibe, and Vixen. Macroman's lifeless body is found, and bystanders recognize Captain Marvel as the killer. This was a setup, but Billy Batson believes his negligence was responsible for the death of another human being. Billy Batson decides that he must never become Captain Marvel again. Darkseid observes this and laughs, having destroyed his first god, his first legend. To be continued.
Very well done.
Yeah, thank you. And Marvel had something to say about him not becoming Captain Marvel anymore, too.
Yeah.
Marvel and their lawyers decided he could no longer become Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
I was going to mention that. I always thought that they weren't allowed to call him Captain Marvel because it belonged to Marvel at that time.
I don't think at this time. So, I think it later, the Lost
Sands. I was going to say, I was surprised when all the time they kept referring to him in the stories as Captain Marvel, and I thought, can they do that? Because I thought they had to call him Shazam, but
no, because they had they had the Marvel family, right? They had the Marvels, which was Mary Marvel and that whole, I'm not familiar with them, but that whole Marvel family.
DC had fought against Fawcett Comics for years that, the Shazam family was a big ripoff of Superman. They finally won it. I want to say either in the late 60s or early 70s. There was a, before they actually publicly launched Shazam, they had a Captain Thunder appear in a Superman comic, which I always thought was actually pretty cool. But as they started getting their own Captain Marvel comics or Shazam comics going on, they wanted to fully integrate them. Now, there had been a number of crossovers where Superman and Shazam wind up fighting over the years, even one where they got each other's powers. So you see Superman in Shazam's costume or Captain Marvel's costume. But it didn't really feel like he was part of the same universe until here, because part of Legends, and then he joins the Justice League, even if it is the Wahaha Justice League. But still pretty cool.
Well, DC was that unlike Marvel, they kept absorbing other companies' heroes. Like, they got the Charleston comics or those characters. They got Captain Marvel. Plastic Man came from another line. It was originally a DC character, I don't believe.
But I don't think that Marvel contested the use of Captain Marvel for a number of years.
Not till much
until
later,
21st century. Now, as far as the art goes in this one, I got to say that Kessel actually took a light hand. I think Byrne did some incredibly tight pencils, and that Kessel just did as tight of inks as he could to stay faithful to Byrne's work, especially when you look at Darkseid.
If I may, my favorite part of the Legends series that I've seen so far is Darkseid's...
His appearance.
He has this ominous aura around him, even, just through a comic. It's like whenever I read Sandman and I saw Lucifer Morningstar, I get this feeling of dread just when looking at him.
Except that image on the last page, he looks like Muttley from the that cartoon where they're trying to get the bird. But look at the picture of Darkseid on the last page.
No, I know.
It just doesn't look right. Now, maybe it's different in your copy, but from this is the digital copy from the 30th anniversary trade. And it just looks so weird.
Well, Darkseid, to me, the way Byrne draws him, his face looks like he's been chiseled out of stone.
Yeah. And that goes back to his aping Kirby's in that.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
Well, I thought it was interesting.
Great.
Yeah, the artwork in it is, and there's a lot of new characters. Brimstone, brand new character. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this is the first appearance of Amanda Waller. She's new.
Yep. So Brim gets creator
credit for that.
Credit for that, yeah.
This reintroduces the new Suicide Squad, comes out of this series. Colonel Flagg, I think, he's an older character. He's not new.
The Macro Man, the Flash.
Yeah, Macro Man's new.
Volume 3, maybe. But yeah, Wally West is the Flash. And I really like that Mike Baron Flash series.
Yeah, I think I've got that first issue, but I didn't.
Wait, Kirk, you haven't even said a word, and we got to talk about
Cal Bell himself. Cosmic
Boy's costume and how well it translates. Because, yeah.
Are we doing a 10-minute time frame?
I'd say 15.
Yeah, 15.
I'm premature. Go ahead.
But, yeah, I was just curious what you guys thought of how Cosmic Boy's costume translated with all that pink and black.
It was never an issue for me.
It's definitely better than the one Dave Cockrum had done for him, where it was just the black that cut off weird spots on his chest.
Were his legs bare at one point?
In the older costume that Cockrum had drawn.
Okay.
It was a very scary costume.
I do like the design of Brimstone.
Yes.
He looks a little like Atomic Skull. And that his name from DC?
Yep.
I get that kind of feeling from him, but...
Every time I look at him, I think of Surtur from
Thor
Ragnarok.
Yeah.
I keep just thinking about that.
Yep.
But it was so popular, they utilized him in the first episode of Justice League Unlimited.
I heard they did a loose interpretation of this in that cartoon. Is that right? I haven't seen it, but I've heard they kind of covered this a little bit in the Justice League International or on Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah, I don't think they had a Suicide Squad in there, did they?
No, they never had a Suicide Squad in that show. Not that I remember, at least. But they did have an Amanda Waller. Yeah. And they had plenty of moments where the Justice League were definitely belittled by Darkseid.
Hmm.
Yep.
Well, Kirk, Nigel, you guys have been quiet. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Nigel.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, talking about Cosmic Boy, as I say, I have no sort of comparison to look at, because I didn't really know who he was before I read this. So, yeah, the outfit he has here that they've given him, or the way Burns drawn him, looks fine to me, yeah. I was okay with that. And, yeah, the artwork, as has already been mentioned, is very nice. You say it's the first time that Carl Kessel had done inks on John Byrne?
Yes.
Yeah, and I like it very much, because I'd never heard of Carl Kessel before, and then I heard you guys talking about it on previous podcasts, but this was the first time I'd seen it, and yeah, I like the, I like the work on that too. I was a bit shocked by the Justice League lineup, because I always... recall the Justice League as being the main guys like Batman.
This is
Superman.
The Detroit Justice League lineup.
Right, yeah.
This is very close to the end.
Yeah, the only two I recognized straight off when I look at the picture were... I knew Martian Manhunter, of course, who looks really good here, drawn by Byrne, by the way, and Firestorm. I didn't really know any of the others. I was like, who's that? Oh, Elongated Man. Maybe had he changed his costume? I remember somebody in a red and black costume who could stretch.
Yeah, they just switched that. Redoing a DC.
Yeah.
And what about, now, were you familiar with Vibe from the Flash TV series?
No, I never watched any of the TV series.
Because this Vibe... Cisco Ramon, same name, was a breakdancer with superpowers.
Breakdancer.
Who gets, spoilers, it gets choked out by a pair of robotic hands.
In, like, just a couple months.
Yeah.
I mean, just a few issues in, there are from the end of that Justice League.
This whole thing is fixed to end.
I got that idea that this is kind of the end of this team coming up in this. Yeah. I enjoyed the first issue. Like you say, Darkseid looking very menacing.
I like this Macro Man guy. He's very Kirby-esque in his drawing, but this is his only appearance ever.
It is.
Aside from the various flashbacks.
It looks a little like an Asgardian suit of armor or a little Galactus, something.
Mm-hmm. It's designed to be killed, right?
I think so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. He's like a one-off. Before we move on, I will say this about, because we were talking about the inking. I read on Burn Robotics that Burn took great strides in differentiating Captain Marvel's face from Superman's face. And then he was disappointed that he's not used that much in the series. You don't see him much. And he thought the inking kind of let it down. So I don't know if he wasn't too happy with Kessel's inks to that point. So you could tell the difference between Shazam and the Man of Steel.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to say I'm just looking at a picture now on page 13 of the original where Macroman's whacking him away and he's kind of upside down, but if you turn the comic upside down and look at the face, it's not that much different to it. Could be Superman. It just hasn't got the kiss curl, that's all.
Yeah, that is pretty close to Supes.
And then at the bottom of the same page, he looks a bit more like, he looks like Colossus. His face when he's grimacing there.
It's his hair.
The grip of Macro Man. Yeah.
Yep. Kirk, you got any thoughts?
I think I was living in Detroit when this came out, and so the fans in the Detroit area were pretty thrilled to see Justice League Detroit be unveiled, but I think we're just as quickly disheartened or disenchanted with how it went. It didn't seem to be catching on. It wasn't fully embraced by the fans, and so it didn't mean much to me when they were reformed or revamped or however you want to put it, plowed asunder, however you want to say it, in favor of this new team. But I don't quite recall what the controversy about Cosmic Boy's outfit was, except something about the shading that it was so pink raised questions in some people's minds of whether, in fact, he was supposed to be nude with black accents on it. I don't recall exactly what it was. When I looked at it, I wasn't concerned, and I didn't care, so I don't recall reading much more about it. It's just a footnote that I wouldn't have even thought about if you hadn't brought up. That's all I've really got. I don't have the issue in front of me.
Yeah, it was just a combination of colors people just didn't think about much. You know, pink and black with white highlights. And his previous costume was basically black with skin, and it looked almost like a woman's outfit.
Yes.
You know, cutting off right at the top of the breasts, and showing a lot more skin.
That's what I recall.
Yeah, that was the one just before this one.
Okay.
But his earliest costumes did have a lot of pink in them, and it came from his Magno Ball uniform from the days that he was competing. Shows how long I've been reading Legion.
Well, are we ready to move on to issue number 2?
I think so.
Okay. Yep. Who's got that? Is that
wait, we didn't even talk about the cover. because the cover itself is, I don't know if you want to call it a swipe or an homage, but the Fantastic Four issue with Silver Surfer and Terax, or Tyros, whatever you want to call them. This right here is a lot like that, because instead of Darkseid, it'd be Dr. Doom holding the characters in his hands.
That's true.
I don't remember what issue number that was. Tim?
I know I picked it as one of my... I like the issue inside.
259, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's where Doom dies.
But I really like that cover. I like pretty much all the covers in this. But that one's very nice. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
No, it's a good one to kind of kick off the series.
Yep. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on to issue number 2, and I'll be covering that one. So we have Legends number 2, published by DC Comics, with a cover date of December 1986. Cover price is 75 cents. Page count 32. That's 22 pages of story, 10 pages of ads. Title of our story is Breach of Faith. Plotted by John Ostrander. Scripted by Len Wein. Penciled by John L. Byrne. Inker Carl Kessel. Letter Steve Haney. Colorist Thomas Zucco. And editor Mike Gold. Editor-in-chief is Dick Giordano. This was reprinted again in Legends, the collection trade paperback in 1993, and the Legends 30th Anniversary Edition in 2016. Other books Byrne did that month would be Marvel Tales 194, which is a reprint. Man of Steel number 5, the Bizarro story. Man of Steel number 6, The Haunting, where he finds out his entire Kryptonian heritage. The Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe Deluxe Edition, number 13, Super Adaptoid to Umar. And Who's Who, the Definitive Directory of the DC Universe, number 22, Starfire to Cyanide. And that would include Superman. So that cover is that one that's got that gigantic-looking Superman, if y'all remember. Some pretty cool stuff there. Our synopsis goes like this. Macro-Man lies dead on the ground, having been killed by Captain Marvel's lightning. Reporter Gwyneth Tate interviews psychologist G. Gordon Godfrey at the scene. Godfrey declares the superheroes are lawless vigilantes who have no place in modern society. This broadcast is viewed by a child named Lisa Sutton, who finds it ridiculous. Billy Batson stands in the crowd and watches, still traumatized by accidentally killing Macro-Man. Billy is horrified by how easily Godfrey incites the crowd into bloodthirsty mob. He runs into an alleyway and cries, terrified to transform back into Captain Marvel. Back on Apocalypse, Darkseid observes Billy Batson and laughs at his crushed spirit. It's revealed that Macro-Man was actually an animate possessed by the psionic entity Dr. Bedlam. They rig Macro-Man to explode at Captain Marvel's lightning. Dasaad explains that Bedlam experienced the death and is completely traumatized. Bedlam is sent to Granny Goodness for rehabilitation. The Phantom Stranger arrives to argue with Darkseid about humanity. Darkseid insists that he is liberating mankind from the burden of their free will. The Stranger says that order must be chosen, not imposed. Darkseid begins a second phase of Operation Humiliation. Brimstone continues battling the Justice League of America in New York City. Martian Manhunter is powerless because of his weakness to fire. Vibe destroys the ground underneath Brimstone and makes him fall. Brimstone collapses a building on top of them, burying them alive. Colonel Rick Flagg visits Deadshot in Rikers Island Prison. Not that Riker. Deadshot is invited to join the mysterious Task Force X program in exchange for an early release. Bronze Tiger accompanies Flagg to keep Deadshot in check. Deadshot agrees and walks out of his cell with Flagg. Batman and Robin stop a hostage situation in a crowded shopping center. The local police are angry that Batman could have gotten someone hurt, but Commissioner Gordon defends Batman. The crowd agrees that Batman is a menace, and they violently attack Robin. Batman tries to intervene, but someone blinds him by hurling a bottle of perfume. Yeah. Gordon rushes Batman outside to safety, where the mob is overturning the Batmobile. Gordon tells Batman he must leave the scene because his presence is inciting violence. In Chicago, Blue Beetle takes down a drug dealer named Wheeler. Police arrive immediately, furious at Beetle. It's revealed that they've been observing Wheeler for weeks, waiting to find his connection. Blue Beetle ruining their sting. Wheeler insists that Blue Beetle's his drug connection, and the police try to arrest the Beetle. The Beetle flees into his bug aircraft while the police shoot at him with lethal intent. Guy Gardner of the Green Lantern Corps tries to rescue a damaged plane over Los Angeles. The plane nearly crashes, but he manages to land it on the freeway. When Guy descends, the local civilians yell at him for stopping traffic and endangering lives. Guy tells them to take it up with their congressman and flies away. Cosmic Boy wakes up in Teen Titans Tower after the fight with Brimstone. Changeling and the Flash found him stumbling around and brought him to the tower so he could recuperate. Cosmic Boy tells him that the lady he loves is still caught in this insanity and he has to find her. Professor Ivo watches Cosmic Boy on TV and declares it's time for his revenge on the Justice League. President Reagan talks to Superman while watching Godfrey and the riots on TV. Superman says that Reagan can't blame superheroes when Godfrey is the one inciting violence. Despite this, Reagan believes he must act in the name of the public good. Reagan issues an executive order declaring that all costume superheroes must cease their activities until the crisis has passed. This includes Superman. Two police officers in Gotham find Robin beaten unconscious by the mob. Now, I did come across two bits of trivia here. There's a movie marquee in a theater next to Brimstone's right foot that reads Brother Power the Geek, the movie. Yeah. And that's a DC Comics character who's basically a store mannequin brought to life. And then, of course, you know, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, George Shultz, and Caspar Weinberger were all actual members of the U.S. presidential administration back in 1986. And they all make their guest appearances. This wasn't made illegal until Jodie Foster used Bill Clinton in Contact in the late 90s. I don't think it was ever made illegal to use them in comic books, though.
Byrne does a good job with the likenesses of Reagan and Bush and the other actual people. I know he doesn't like doing that.
Yeah, he does that by photo referencing, though.
Yeah. Same with the White House on page 21. Yeah. That looks like that's photo referenced.
Brian, does it state which Robin this is? Is it Jason Dick Todd? Grayson?
It's Jason Todd, yeah.
Jason Todd, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And one thing about this one, it's infuriating, and I don't know if Byrne was told to do this or not, but it seemed like they kept recapping the Macro Man murder every issue.
Yes.
Yep.
But I understand the need for it. I just didn't think they needed to show it every time. They could have just recapped it without showing it, or just given the one window of it blowing up rather than everything leading up to it, you know?
We'll say that's a little, for a comic of this era, it's a little gruesome. You see his smoldering body in the first splash page.
Yeah. Well, we get some other gruesome stuff in later issues. I mean, it's just, it doesn't pull many punches. I gotta say, in this particular series, the hair of most of the characters looks like Hollywood stylings. You know, you could get an Oscar for hairstyling, which is one of the categories that Star Trek always got nominations for. Oscars and Emmys. Now, how many people were taken aback by the fact that Batman was taken out by a bottle of perfume?
Well, I thought the fact that he would leave, I just thought him leaving Robin was way out of character. I don't think there's any way you could get him to leave Robin.
Yeah, but he's totally incapacitated by this.
Yeah, but he's still, I don't think he would do it.
And the Batmobile didn't blow up or shield itself or anything.
Apparently not.
I don't believe we had the Batman movie where it shows that it can shield itself yet.
No. It's still 3 years
off.
Yeah,
but Batman always had some kind of protection built into even that Batmobile. Which, that Batmobile looks like a cross between the Filmation Batmobile from the early 70s and the George Barris Batmobile. Because it's got the two big bubble windshields. It's kind of cool.
Brian, you're our kind of, at least more than me, you're our Titan expert. Who are, at this time, who was in the Titans? Is it Flash, Changeling, Wonder Girl?
Yeah, Wonder Girl, Raven.
Cyborg.
Nightwing. Though I don't know if he was Nightwing yet. I think... Oh, yeah. He turned to Nightwing before Crisis. Cyborg. And I think you got the others, Kid Flash and Changeling. Though my son takes issue with that and wants me to call him Beast Boy.
I just kind of wonder where that... I've always thought that the superheroes we get in this miniseries was odd, that we didn't get some of the other heavy hitters. We don't get all the Titans here. We see basically two of them. I guess the rest of them we get, but and this must have been very confusing if you were a regular DC reader.
Well, I think it boils down to editorial allowance. You know, when John Ostrander and Len Wein come up and say, we got an idea for a story, they want to make it a big one, not necessarily as big as Crisis, but it is going to be a event across all the books. So they say, what characters can we use? And you look at the collection of characters in this, and it's kind of like, okay, Black Canary, Guy Gardner instead of Hal Jordan. And, I mean, you got Captain Marvel. It's a mishmash.
Well, according to the list...
You get one of the Charlton characters.
It did not cross into the Teen Titans at all, if they had their own book at this time.
Well, yeah, actually, there was two Titans books going on right now. There was a Mando format, and then the other book, which was the Tales of the Teen Titans... was actually a year behind. And so it would repeat what came out in the Mando format a year later.
That might have been why it didn't cross. I mean, I know that's, we talked about that before, that it's what it depends on what toys you can play with to who you can allow in your book.
And why they didn't put out toys for this, I don't know.
Well, they did with Secret... Well, not Secret Wars, but what was it?
Superpowers.
Superpowers.
But that was a thing off the TV series first and foremost.
Yeah.
The comics that they did afterwards was just kind of an afterthought. At least I thought that's the way it was. I could be wrong. Somebody correct me if I am wrong there.
Yeah, I don't. This is the first we're kind of getting talk, or you get evidence that Godfrey can't, you know, that he is somehow manipulating the public. And apparently it could work even through the TV, because I think it's the sound of his voice. And you get the first hint here that it doesn't work with kids. And I don't think it works with everybody, because... Gordon doesn't seem to be affected, but the other police officers are. So I wonder if it's never stated, but I wonder if it only works on it's like the Force, it only works on the weak-minded.
Yeah, or the confused or undecideds.
Right. So if you've got a strong will, it's not going to affect you, probably.
Yeah. Has Guy Gardner ever looked cooler? Just the way his costume and everything shows up. Now, right around this time, I traveled to Turkey, and I was able to get a denim acid wash jacket that was in the same, you know, shape, you know, that had the cross thing and all that, and the popped-up collar. Obviously, it was denim, though. It wasn't green with the lantern symbol on it. But I always thought it was cool.
I never quite liked his boots in this design, because his boots always look too big.
Yeah, they look very really moon puffy.
Boot-like. Yeah. But
look like ski boots.
Yeah, they look moon boots or something like
and
that.
And then the Mo haircut, you just, you know, can't get past that. That became popular in the 90s, though, so.
Well, he doesn't say it in this issue, or does he? But the kind of recurring joke with him is he always announces himself as the one true Green Lantern. You know, I'm like, I'm the only guy who should be Green Lantern.
Yeah, it was when he was falling. I thought it was when he said it, yeah.
Says it on page 17 as well, when he's flying up to save the plane.
Yeah, and then on 18, as he's falling, he's like, I'm Green Lantern, damn it. The Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Well, I think he just... At this point, he had just was allowed to become Green Lantern with John Stewart. Because I think Hal was retired at this point. No, he was still in the Green Lantern quarters. He hadn't retired yet.
But yeah, I mean, the thing was is that the Guardians had splintered, and half of them were supporting Guy Gardner, the others were supporting John Stewart. But at this point, the Guardians were done as the Guardians of the Universe. And the remainder of the Green Lantern Corps was on Earth. And there was only like, I don't know, five or six of them at that point in time.
Yeah, that was when they were all...
Kilowog and Chip and the others were on Earth, yeah.
That was... who was drawing it at that point? I like his work.
Mark Bright?
No. He did E-Man when E-Man was over at...
I know Joe Staton had done a lot of it before and after Crisis.
I think it is Staton. I think it is Staton who was doing it at that point.
He was never better than when he had Frank McLaughlin inking him. And I still remember that one issue. It was a Hal Jordan issue where it's Battlefield Oa. And it's got all the Green Lanterns on the cover. And he's in the center. He's got two rings, you know, one on each hand. It was one of my favorite issues of Green Lantern.
Well, this was the era when, and I think it's pretty controversial, when, what's her name? Is it Arissa? Arista?
The
young, she ages herself up because she's in love with Hal. She basically makes herself from a teenager into a woman so that, and then he actually starts dating her. Has a relationship with her. That wouldn't fly today.
Yeah, they were doing some silly stuff. I know when they had Marvel Comp, not Marvel, but what was the DC Weekly book?
Action Comics?
It was Action Comics, that's right. Comics Weekly. They had a Green Lantern feature in there where they killed Cat Matui.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not very happy about that. Because she was one of my favorite Green Lanterns. So Jason Todd got beat up pretty bad by the crowd. I don't see any crowbars there, but
it's not the last time he's going to get beat up pretty bad.
No, not the last time. That's funny because I just saw a couple issues of Death of the Family today at the comic book shop, and I actually had a discussion yesterday about how I'd paid money to rub out that guy.
Oh, you phoned in?
Yeah, about $3 worth.
You all did.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't reading.
I was just thinking I deserve a refund with interest.
Well, isn't he back? Isn't he Hush?
He's the Red Hood.
He's the Red Hood. Okay. Yeah. But he's back alive, right? As somebody
that's
else.
That's why I deserve a refund. Because I paid to kill him.
Nobody stays dead.
Nobody stays dead except for Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben. It's only because they don't need him for any reason.
Yep. Longest couple in comics, Uncle Ben and that bullet.
Yep.
All right. Well, are we ready to...
I think we're ready for issue three, yeah.
Okay. All right. Chris is going to sit up here.
All right. Comic title, Legends number 3 from DC. The cover date is January 1987. On sale date was October 23rd, 1986. It was 75 cents when it was released. Page count is 32, editor Mike Gold. Title, Send for the Suicide Squad. Page is 22, so that means there's 10 pages of ads. The plotter was John Ostrander, scripter Len Wein, penciler John L. Byrne, inker Carl Kessel, letterer Steve Haney, colorist Thomas J. Zucco.
Zucco, like Danny Zucco from Grease.
Zucco.
Yeah.
Other comics that came out in January of 1987 is Action Comics number 584, Doomsday Squad number 5, Legends number 3, of course came out that month, Marvel Tales number 195, Superman number 1, and the Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe Deluxe Edition number 14. Okay, let me get into this summary real quick. Rioters gather outside Titan's Tower to protest superheroes. Inside, Sarge Steel enforces the presidential edict forbidding all superhero activity, Changeling and the Flash argue that they have rights and insist on being able to leave. Steel threatens to shoot them, but they call his bluff and they leave. Amanda Waller puts together a team of supervillains under Task Force X. This group includes Blockbuster, Bronze Tiger, Captain Boomerang, Deadshot, Enchantress, and Rick Flagg. Boomerang and Deadshot are serving in exchange for prison release, so they are fitted with explosive bracelets in case they try to escape. Blockbuster, Bronze Tiger, and Enchantress do not need bracelets because they joined the team for other reasons. They are sent to attack Brimstone, who is ravaging Mount Rushmore. Captain Boomerang uses special baffle rings to confuse Brimstone. Blockbuster attacks the ground around Brimstone, and Brimstone kills him. Flagg explains that Brimstone is a superheated hydrogen plasma given form by sophisticated magnetic fields. Deadshot uses an experimental laser rifle on Brimstone's core, destroying the monster. Enchantress protects them from the explosion. Bronze Tiger knocks her unconscious when her evil side escapes. Boomerang is furious when he realizes this was a suicide mission. Flagg explains that every one of them is expendable, including himself. Billy Batson is still traumatized, falsely believing he murdered the supervillain Macro Man. A young girl named Lisa Sutton finds Billy crying in the alleyway and invites him to come home with her. Lisa's parents agree with G. Gordon Godfrey, who is denouncing superheroes on TV. Billy and Lisa insult Godfrey, which enrages Lisa's father. Billy runs outside, and Lisa follows to comfort him. Robin recuperates in the hospital as a civilian. Batman is angry that he could not stop the bloodthirsty mob from beating Robin unconscious. Robin apologizes for failing Batman, and Batman says he's just thankful Robin is all right. The riots grow worse outside as criminals run rampant with no superheroes to stop them. Batman says that the civilians don't know what they're doing. Robin disagrees and says the people have always hated them. Batman returns to the streets. President Reagan talks to Superman about the edict forbidding all superhero activity. Superman disagrees but trusts Reagan and says he's sure that things will work out fine. Superman flies away and promises that he will obey the presidential edict even if others don't. Darkseid and the Phantom Stranger argue on Apocalypse, Darkseid says that everything is going as he planned, and Zod reviews their victories. Phantom Stranger points to Lisa Sutton and says Darkseid can never win, because legends will live on in the hearts of the hearts and minds of children. And Darkseid unveils his newest weapon, the Wondrous Warhounds.
Very well done.
Very well done.
I thought that synopsis was interesting, is that it followed each storyline to its end rather than...
You're right. Chronic, yeah.
The interludes.
It jumped around.
That came from the DC Wiki. Now, I forgot to talk about the cover of issue 2 when we were covering that. I thought that was a really good cover with the superheroes standing there in a circle and all the rioters standing around them. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that one.
It's George Perez level of characters.
Yes. Very, very nice cover. Okay, but then the issue 3 cover is Brimstone standing on top of Mount Rushmore with a flaming sword in hand and the Suicide Squad down at the bottom.
I thought that was a pretty striking cover. I remember that one very clearly.
Well, it's kind of got Superman, Changeling, Flash, and Batman in a... I don't know how they're in relief, but you know they're not in focused color.
Yeah, they're in the background, but they're a little washed out to show that they are not really there. They're more observing it, and it's the Suicide Squad's in the bottom foreground.
Yep. Now, when they kill Blockbuster, did that shock anybody?
It didn't. It just shocked me the way they did it.
That's kind of gruesome.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Just like what they did to Macro Man.
They took hold. They held no bars back. Mm-hmm. They did not hold back. If they were going to kill him, they said, "Okay, let's kill him." And notice how it's only the villains who are dying. Like no heroes have been injured so far that I've noticed.
Yeah, well, they didn't
except Robin, of course. They're injured, just not dead.
Yeah, but they would have to have brought in a hero like Grow Arm Hair Lad or, you know, somebody with some ridiculous powers in order to kill him.
They would have done like they did with the Scourge, where they just picked, you know, C-level villains to be killed off.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought with Blockbuster. I had to look him up. I thought, oh, he's probably was created... he apparently has been around for a bit. He's not a well-known character, but he's been around for a while. He's kind of a Mr. Hyde type character.
Yeah, and while they killed him here, apparently his brother took up the mantle in the Starman storyline, Roger Stern's series, Will Payton Starman.
I always thought that Blockbuster was sort of DC's version of the Hulk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is, when I first heard about Blockbuster about an hour and 15 minutes ago, I thought he was, what was his name? He's a Teen Titans villain, part of the Hive.
Mammoth.
I thought he was Mammoth. Because to me, they looked kind of similar.
Well, they're just big, bulky guys.
Yeah.
Well, or Solomon Grundy, except he's not white. But
yeah.
Same type of character.
And he seemed very forgettable for a reason. And when they killed him, I was surprised, but I was like, it kind of just makes sense. He really just didn't need to be around. But it does kind of suck knowing the fact that he kind of volunteered for it for other reasons, as stated in the synopsis, and that he just got straight up murdered.
Well, he wasn't the smartest of characters.
Yeah, but...
In fact, I don't think he actually said any words except...
I don't think he can... Well, according to Wiki, that when he transforms, he loses the power of speech. So he can just kind of grunt and growl. Whether his intelligence drops, I don't know if he's like the Hulk or not, but... I think he's just there to create stakes because nobody else... And to your point, Brian, a lot of people are... It's burning up. That seems to be the... favorite way to die here, by incineration.
Yep.
Same with Brimstone. He was created for this show, and I think he comes back, but he was created for this, and then he's kind of dispatched in a couple issues.
Yeah. I have a thought about the inking in this issue, because, like, Sarge Steel looks like Dick Giordano inked him, and in the later pages, when Billy and Lisa are talking, it almost looks like Jerry Ordway is inking.
Yeah, the inking does look a little different than the previous issue, doesn't it?
It's not as consistent, that's for sure, yeah.
And this Sarge Steel is a new character, too. This is his first appearance. So he's a brand new character.
Is that his first appearance?
Yep.
Now, that's the guy from Legends of Tomorrow.
Is he?
I believe so. Chris and I were talking about that earlier. We thought.
Yeah, because, what's his name? Sarge Steel was in Legends of Tomorrow. But they, like, never, ever showed his power off because they couldn't afford it.
I thought that was Steel. The guy that's got... in a robotic body. I thought that's who that was on that show.
Huh.
No, he was just a normal guy who was kind of like Colossus.
Okay.
And he was a Colossus ripoff, to be honest.
This guy just has a robotic hand. That's all. He just has a bionic hand. He lost it in combat.
Way,
okay.
But you understand what I'm saying there? How it looks like Giordano inked it? Especially Sarge Steel's face.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a typical burn face. Compare that to the Flash next panel. That looks like Burn's work.
Yeah. Now, the other thing about this issue is the bottom panel on every page is part of the recap of the first issue.
There's a lot of recap in this whole series.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I like the way he did that. Like he did with the splitting the pages in half when he was doing one or two of the FF.
Yeah, issues. Or the Hawk.
Yeah, and I like that idea. Yeah, where you've got the two storylines going on at the same time on every page. Yeah.
Now, page 11 is the page where Bruce is visiting Jason at the hospital.
Mm.
And they've got the first panel where it cuts off his face, so you're supposed to, like, see Batman. But I actually see, like, Superman with a shadow over him. And scowling. And actually, he's wearing black suit with a pink shirt. When I was just a while ago saying those colors don't go together.
Must be boy.
Kidding me? Black and pink go together? Like crazy.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
I mean, here it do, yeah.
It's like black and gray, or pink and gray.
Mm.
I do think on page 14, where Brimstone is grabbing Blockbuster, that hand to me looks very Kirby. Look at it. Look at the fingers.
Yeah.
God, I'm sure that's got the stink.
Yeah.
I think it smells like barbecue. Yeah, now it's funny because like page 15 is where Deadshot hits Brimstone with that whatever it is that breaks him apart, but because they got the recap on the bottom page and the recap includes Brimstone, it looks like it's a continuation of the story.
Mm.
And I thought this Enchantress looks much better than the one that was in the Suicide Squad movie.
Mm.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I had to look her back. This is the same person, June Moon.
Yeah, who was a Supergirl villain.
Yeah.
At least that I saw from Superman Family Comics.
Yeah, I don't think she was ever involved with Flag. I guess that was just something invented for the movie.
Yeah.
But... I got a question for you, Nigel. Maybe you can answer this or not because you're not Australian, but you're the closest we have. They really lean into Captain Boomerang's language.
Aussie.
His accent. And he keeps saying Cobber. Is that
Cobber, yeah.
That like he's at first I thought maybe he was saying copper, but he's saying Cobber. Is that just
Cobber, yeah.
Like bloke no,
it's
or
just
guy
like
or...
Yeah, it's just like a word that they use to mean fella or mate or whatever. Okay. Yeah. Cobber's just another person who you may or may not know well at, but yeah. It's just, yeah, so they just refer to people as a cobber, yeah.
He uses it throughout this
well,
book.
Well, a male, I think. I think it's for male only.
A person, yeah. Okay.
Because women are Sheilas.
That's true.
That's a Sheila, yeah.
I think he says he doesn't say it to Amanda. Does he say that to Waller at one point? He calls her something, and she rebukes him about it. She calls
I'm just looking. He calls her Sheila. He says, you ever call me... Oh, if you ever call me Amanda, which is her first name, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Or Medea again. Medea.
Yeah.
Medea. Then she'll stick things up his...
Well, it's like in the first... I think it's the first issue when Flag comes in. And he meets Waller for the first time, and he says, "You're out of your cotton picking mind." And she says, "If you ever mention anything, with cotton picking again, you're going to be in trouble."
Yeah, that's true.
She doesn't take any guff.
Nope, she doesn't. Nope. And that's how she's kind of portrayed in the film. You know, when they betray her, so.
I thought they did remarkably good casting for her, considering that the actress was not necessarily obese. But boy, I thought they hit the nail on the head with her.
Well, Nell Carter wasn't available. Yeah, I mean, that was his model for Amanda Waller, as I understand it.
Was it really?
Something along those lines, yeah.
You need somebody who's not just sassy, but she is ruthless. I mean, she is...
Ruthless, good word.
Yep. But Viola Davis was a good pick.
Good pick, yeah. Nell Carter could be sassy. I don't think she could be cold-blooded the way the actress that played her was.
Now I'm looking at page 20, and that's where Lisa Sutton, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
And her family are arguing about Gordon Godfrey and... This is a page also where her little sister is playing with the Superman action figure.
Yeah.
Who's the other one? I can't make it out.
It looks almost like a member of Hydra.
Yeah, but like the little sister and then Lisa herself are so out of proportion for kids.
Yeah, we get throughout this, we get more Burns' inability to draw children as children. They look like little people.
Midgets.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm.
And again, we get more evidence that this doesn't work on kids. They seem to be oblivious to Godfrey, but the parents are kind of eating it up. And I thought, I don't know much about the Phantom Stranger, really, but he seems involved in this early on. And doesn't seem threatened by Darkseid, but he does. Is he kind of like the Watcher? Is he not supposed to interfere?
It's not so much not supposed to interfere. I mean, he's like the cut-rate Spectre. You know, he's the guy that calls Superman in to fix some things. If you remember, Action Comics around this time had Superman and Phantom Stranger teaming up against the all those dead spirits in that graveyard.
Nigel and I covered that last year for Halloween.
I really like that one. But yeah, he's the Deus Ex Machina to spiritual matters.
David's here,
but he can't. David's here? Oh, David is here.
I can see
surprise.
Spins.
Now, the war dog or war hounds that he brings in, those are pretty vicious looking.
Yeah.
Those like got a chihuahua face.
I love how, like, ominous his smile is, even from afar.
Yeah.
And why are his calves the size of his thighs?
It's the boots he's wearing. They're just made to look, make him look thick.
Hey, I've got big calves. Mine don't look that
big. Yeah, I know.
Lord have mercy.
Ooh. It's a big lad.
David, now that you're here, what do you... I'm sure you're familiar with these books. We're on issue 3 right now.
Yeah, I... well, first of all, I wanted to join in just to say hello. I am still alive. I have not left... I have not shed my mortal coil yet. Although my kids are working on it.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, it's tough having an 11 and 7 year old.
11 and 7? I thought they were both younger.
No, 11 and 7.
Well, they were when we first met David.
But... Yeah, that's right, yeah. I don't even know if Declan was born. David.
We've decided that they don't listen to authority and they can't be influenced by Glorious Godfrey here.
So they're going to be your savior, David. So if you succumb to Godfrey's voice, then they're going to be your savior.
Yes, we had several times this week where my wife was like, why did we have kids again? Said, because they're supposed to be the ones to take care of us when we're old, and then we guilt them into everything.
Nice.
You hear that, Chris? You hear that, Chris?
Coming for you, buddy.
Oh, he's got plans.
You gotta take after
us.
The old man.
He's got plans for us, so.
Yeah, is he going to take you on a special hunting trip, in air quotes?
No, no, but everything that he's got planned is contingent upon him becoming a rich, rich billionaire. So, we'll see.
It will happen, folks.
He will also make the definitive Superman movie.
Hey, we haven't. We have, is it James Gunn? Superman coming.
Pretty much in the can.
There's hope, you know.
I'm very excited for that movie.
Yeah, you got Mr. Terrific, and we don't know who else is going to come out.
Guy Gardner, Hot Girl, Metamorpho, Lex Luthor, of course.
Metamorpho is going to be in there?
Yeah.
Yes, I saw that too, yeah.
Nathan Fillion is Guy Gardner, and he looks perfect.
He does. I love it.
Yep.
Well, there's always been a lot of hype around, you know, the DC movies, and of course we've been let down. I will say the Snyder cut of Justice League, I think we've talked about it before, was much better than what we got in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, agreed. Super long. You know, would have never been released if it had been as long as it was. But all the people that we're talking about, they are in Legends, which is what we are talking about. Just real briefly, of course, I didn't read this when it came out. I was too young. So I read it much, much later in a collected edition, although I do have all the issues now. I think which isn't – is it one that has the first appearance of Amanda Waller?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Two?
You know, maybe she'll make an appearance in the Superman movie. But, you know, I just my general thoughts, because I'm sure I'm going to get pulled away from the kids because they just went to bed. Just as background, we're recording this between 7 and 9 o'clock Central Time. And between 7 and 8, that's usually when we watch a show with the kids. And what they're hooked on right now is we're watching the – it sounds like a bad parent thing, but trust me, it's not. We're watching the Chucky.
Really?
Yes. My kids, you know, they are really good at separating reality from fantasy. So we've watched all of the Freddy Kruegers, all of the Jasons, except for the few that are like really bad. We watched the first Chucky.
I got to make a phone call here.
Hello, yeah. Child Protective Services?
Well, it's not as bad as when Chris asked us to watch Debbie Does Dallas, so, you know.
Don't even get me started. That was a VHS tape that was circulating around when I was a high school student. That and Behind the Green Door.
Yep.
God, they're so bad.
They're all we had back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Technology.
Yeah, you took what you could get. You know, these kids today.
Either that or you try to watch the scrambled channels on cable.
Oh, yeah. You get a millisecond here and there. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So we've been watching the Chucky, which I didn't even know it was a TV show. My daughter had to tell me. She goes, "Did you know there was a Chucky TV show?" And I'm like, "There was?" She goes, "Yeah, it's on Peacock." So we've watched the first two seasons. We're on the third season now, and it's actually pretty good, surprisingly.
PG-13 or R-rated?
Definitely R. Well, there's a lot of gore. But, so that's what we've been watching. You know, it's, like I said, they can separate reality from fantasy much better than I could at their age. I would never have made it through these shows. But they can bounce back and forth. You know, we watch the Chucky show, and then with Mom, they watch, you know, the Holiday Baking Show. And they're totally fine
that's
watching.
Horror.
Yeah, to me it is. But, yeah, so I read Legends much, much later and, you know, really enjoyed it. It's definitely no Crisis on Infinite Earths, but it tells a very good story. You know, it's not drawn out. So I just wanted to pop in and say, you know, happy 150th episode, which is just crazy.
You were in a lot of them.
You want to take issue 4, David? We're just about to start.
Why are you going to put me on the spot?
I don't think he's got a synopsis ready.
That's okay.
I don't, but I can probably ask ChatGPT to write me one quick.
Pretty quick, yeah.
Don't you dare.
Hey, man. Don't diss ChatGPT. You know how many college students got through using that?
They're pushing that on us at work. They want us to use it, except not chat. It's Copilot. So we have all our Microsoft stuff.
Excel Hyper, as in high performance, is what we use.
I've used a little bit of it in Photoshop.
Yeah,
but it's better than
it's coming. You know, I think the younger kids are, you know, they're going to I just ask Copilot to write me a synopsis. Do you want to hear it?
Okay. I'm scared.
Okay. Here we go. I've been using Copilot because, as the podcasters know, I got laid off from my job in July that I've been working at for 20 years. And so I've been playing a lot with, you know, the new technology. And I will say I do like Copilot. It's very good at, you know, especially as someone that's, you know, searching for a job. You can put job posting up on one side of your screen and put your resume up on the right side and ask Copilot to review the requirements of the position against your resume, and it will tell you if it's a good fit or not. And then you can go down the rabbit hole of, you know, how can I write a better, you know, intro or summary based on my experience as it relates to the job. So there's definitely some benefits here.
I do like it for writing. It'll write you a better kind of more professional email if you want something to go out. It'll kind of clean it up for you.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And you can take something that you've written and pop it in there and say, "Hey, can you make this shorter? Or can you make this more concise? Or make it sound more professional?" And
I'm sitting here looking at my son right now, wondering if he's using it to write his papers.
No, because there's anti AI tools that the teachers have that will discover AI being used in writing papers.
What if you're suffering from Asperger's so far that you just sound like
like that. I mean, how can you tell?
No. That AI detector, it tried cracking down on me for using AI when I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't like that stuff. It got on me.
He is a little bit on the spectrum, just like my dad and I, so...
It got on me. It made me mad. And my teacher was, like, confused. More confused than I was.
Well, they've had that technology for quite a while. I mean, I remember back in college when you would submit a paper, it would review your paper and put it against, you know, published works out there and score it against that. But, yeah, sure. You want to hear the Copilot synopsis?
Yeah, okay.
All right, so I asked Copilot, can you write me a synopsis of DC Comics Legends number 4 comic book issue? It's a sure thing. Here's a brief synopsis of DC Legends number 4. In this issue titled Cry Havoc, Darkseid's plan to turn humanity against its heroes continues to unfold. Darkseid sends Desaad to, is it Sicardus?
Yeah.
Sicardus?
Skataris.
Skataris. While in Star City, two police officers arguing about the presidential edict outlawing superheroes. Their car crashes when they are attacked by Count Vertigo, who is robbing a nearby bank. Black Canary arrives and takes down Vertigo, rescuing the officers. However, the anti-hero officer blames Black Canary for the death of his partner during the struggle. Meanwhile, the Joker murders several people with poison for his girlfriend, a conceptual artist called Fungus. Souffle. Batman arrives and takes down the Joker's henchmen, ultimately stopping the Joker from harming his girlfriend. Elsewhere, Miss Magnificent and her pretty boys try to break into an armored vault in Los Angeles but are stopped by a construct made by Guy Gardner. Kronos attempts to rob an antique clock exhibit in Chicago but is interrupted by Blue Beetle. Throughout the issue, Darkseid and the Phantom Stranger observe the events, with Darkseid confident that humanity will turn savage when their society breaks down. And it says, I hope this gives you a good overview of the issue. If you have any more questions or need further details, feel free to ask.
Well, I actually have my synopsis, which is taken off the DC Wiki, and that synopsis is cribbed directly from what I've got.
Oh, really? Is it that close?
It's very close, yeah. They've just cut out certain sentences. They've took that synopsis, chopped it up a little bit to make it shorter, but it's exactly... Mm. When I read mine, you'll know. You'll be able to tell.
Yeah, it's just a few plot points.
They only got about halfway through.
Yeah. Well, that kind of teases you. I want you to, you know, come back and ask for more.
So where do we stand, guys? Are we on 4 or on 3?
I think we're done with 3. I think we're going to go officially to 4 now that David gave us his shortened version of number 4. Okay, now the official synopsis, not Copilot, which I stole too, so I'm not taking credit for it. Legends number 4. Has a cover price, or had a cover price, of 75 cents. Our plotter is still John Ostrander. Our writer is still Lynn Wein. Penciler is still John Byrne. Inker is Carl Kessel. The colorist, though, is Carl Gafford. Letterer, Steve Haney. Cover art's John Byrne. Editor is still Mike Gold. And editor-in-chief is still Jake Diogiano. Cover date of November 27th, 1986. So it's just a couple days ago. And cover date of February 1987. Our other Byrne books were Action Comics number, and I've got both in here, so I know which is right. 585 and 586.
That's writer 585. Artist.
Is it? So I thought it was just 585, but I found I'm on both lists. Sometimes mics I get conflicting.
And that was Phantom Stranger.
The one I think that Nigel and I have already covered. Adventures of Superman number 425. He was just the plotter on that one. Marvel Tales 197, which is a reprint of Marvel Team Up number 62, which he was the penciler. And Superman number 2, which he is the writer artist. All right. Star City Two police officers argue about the presidential edict outlawing superheroes. The car crashes when they are attacked by Count Vertigo, who is robbing a nearby bank. Black Canary arrives and takes down Vertigo, rescuing the officers. The anti-hero officer threatens to shoot her, and the pro-hero officer wrestles with his partner's gun. This gives Black Canary enough time to escape, but the pro-hero officer is killed in the struggle. The anti-hero officer blames this on Black Canary, believing that she forced him to shoot his partner. Darkseid and the Phantom Stranger watch in a nearby alley. Darkseid says that humanity easily turns savage when they break down their society. Phantom Stranger asks if this is also true inside the Earth, in Skitaris, where Warlord is a champion of humanity. Darkseid sends Dasan through a boom tube to destroy Warlord. Joker murders several people with poison for his girlfriend, a conceptual artist named Fungus Soufflé. They kiss over the corpses. Batman arrives and takes down the Joker's henchmen. Joker threatens to shoot his girlfriend. To her surprise and horror, Batman explains that it is lucky he chose to ignore the presidential order. He distracts Joker with a batarang and punches him out. Batman says that he should kill the Joker for what he did to Catwoman, then he would be no better than the Joker. Miss Magnificent and her pretty boys try to break into an armored vault in Los Angeles. They are stopped by a giant green monster, and this is revealed to be a construct by Guy Gardner. Gardner, also ignoring the presidential edict, takes Miss Magnificent away. Cronus tries to rob an antique clock exhibit in Chicago by knocking the exhibitors out with a sexy robot. He's interrupted by Blue Beetle, who punches him in his stupid face. Cronus blows up the robot and escapes out the window. Blue Beetle tries to pursue, but is held back by police officers. They try to arrest him, but the Beetle escapes outside into his flying bug. Kit Nelson sits in the Tower of Fate in Salem, watching the anti-hero riots through the orb of Naboo. Nelson decides he must become Dr. Fate again and intervene. His wife, Inza Kramer, hates the Helmet of Fate because she worries that her husband won't come back to her. Kent has no choice if he puts the helmet on, instantly becoming possessed by the wizard Naboo. Dr. Fate leaves, and Inza resigns herself to wait until he returns. Amanda Waller argues with the criminals of Task Force X in Washington. But Captain Boomerang demands that he be released as per their agreement, and Waller refuses. Rick Flag disobeys and turns off the explosive bracelets, letting Boomerang and Deadshot go free. G. Gordon Godfrey holds an anti-hero rally in Gotham City. He tells the crowd that their government is not representing them. President Reagan has ordered the police to arrest Godfrey. Godfrey tells his followers they must overthrow the government. To accomplish this, he unveils the Warhounds and asks who will become the first Warhound. Captain Boomerang begins a crime spree in New York immediately after being released. Moon Flash tries to stop him, but isn't as fast as his predecessor. Changeling interferes to help, but the Flash insists he must do this on his own. They are all attacked by Warhounds. Darkseid brags to the Phantom Stranger that Operation Humiliation is going precisely according to plan. Phantom Stranger says that Darkseid can never succeed as long as Superman lives, because Superman is the single greatest force of good on Earth. Darkseid said that may be true on Earth, so he will bring Superman to Apocalypse. To be continued. I have, and I don't know if you want me to read them now, the three tie-in issues that Byrne had worked on, I have synopsis for, which kind of take place between Legends 4 and Legends 5. So do you want to discuss that? Do you want me to kind of
read those briefly? Do you want to talk about this issue first?
Yeah, we can talk about that, and then I'll read those quickly. They're short.
Yeah, I got to say, I really love the look of Count Vertigo. I just wish that he had not been created by Trevor Von Eden. Not a fan of the person.
Is he not a nice person?
No. And it's funny because the page where you see Black Canary kicking him in the face, she looks like a Giordano character from top to bottom. Especially in the face.
Yeah, and the Joker is definitely a Neil Adams-esque Joker.
Well, yeah, and that last image where Batman standing over him, that looks like a the last page from the Joker's Five-Way Revenge. And the cop that's the anti-hero cop, he looks like the guy from the Hulk. Was it the Rocket or the other guy? I forget what the names were. Rocket and Redeemer.
Oh, the Hulk Enforcers or whatever they were called.
Well, it's fun, Hulkbusters, but it's like the black character is the one that blamed Doc Samson for the death of his ex-wife. This guy right here is blaming Black Canary for the death of his partner. And it's the exact same panel thing where he gets angry and he blames them for it and all that. Of course, here he's like going to shoot first and ask questions. Oh, not bother asking questions. But it's the same thing from the Hulk.
Well, let me ask you, DC, at this time, was Green Arrow around, and isn't she the girlfriend of Green Arrow?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is the Dinah Lance that is the girlfriend of Green Arrow, but it was almost like his book went to an Elseworld state because he stopped using trick arrows and started wearing the more Robin Hood type costume. She was still in the black fishnets and everything, but she didn't use her canary cry at all in any of those books.
So would this have been before Longbow Hunters?
This is around the time of Longbow Hunters. I'm pretty sure it's like right around this time.
I will look it up.
Yeah.
Well, I know she's in Legends TV show, but she wasn't on Arrow, was she?
Well, okay, they had Dinah Lance, but they didn't use her, and she wasn't on Legends. That was Laurel, which is like her sister or cousin or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And really, you don't want to go into the backstory behind Black Canary because that is so messed up and convoluted. Like, is it her or is it her mother that came from Earth 2? Yeah.
I know nothing about other than this issue and then the TV show.
Yeah, well, the pre-crisis Black Canary storyline is so confusing, it'll give you a headache.
Oh, yeah. Green Arrow Longbow Hunters came out in 1987.
So this year.
Yeah, same year. Okay. Well, and I thought this Warlord, I don't know anything about Warlord except that's Mike Grell, correct?
Right. But that surprint of him there with the Phantom Stranger is so awesome.
That green ink, that red inked.
Yeah.
And magenta.
It looks like a surprint from Who's Who.
It's weird to include him. I mean, it sounds like, I don't know anything about Warlord, but it sounds like this guitarist is like their version of the Savage Land. It's got dinosaurs and it's inside the earth. And he's kind of
Kazar. Wasn't the whole premise of the Warlord that he was a man out of time, basically? But wasn't he like a modern guy that got bumped
back? Yeah, I mean, he's normal Earthman that got sent here, Skitaris. Yeah, but so it's still part of the DC universe, even the one universe that they had there. But, of course, they were trying to cross the entire DC series of books, everything except Captain Carrot, you know. And so if you look at all the books for that, those few months that this is coming out, you'll have Legends crossovers everywhere.
Well, this crossed over into Warlord, which I thought was just an odd. Go ahead, David.
Well, I had to co-pilot it to keep with the theme here. Warlord was created by Mike Grell. He first appeared in First Issue Special Number 8 in November of 1975. The character's real name is Travis Morgan, a U.S. Air Force pilot who crash lands in the mythical land of Skitaris, a world inside the Earth filled with ancient civilizations, mythical creatures, and magic.
It's Land of the Lost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. No sleaze stack, though. Mm-hmm.
Grell was at last year or this year when I went to MechaCon. He was there in Orlando because the, oh, who's the couple that's on Facebook? Ruth and
Darren and Ruth Sutherland.
Yeah, Sutherland. They're personal friends of Grell. I know they know him. So they were at his booth when we went by there, and as there was Scott Gardner, and they were talking to him. So I know they know him personally. So
yeah.
Did he have a good line?
This was towards the end of the con, but there wasn't anybody in line. I think.
Was this when he was drawing for Ruth that image?
Possibly.
And he was doing it left-handed?
I don't know. I know we were there with and we kind of went up to his table, and he was talking to them. That's the first time I met them. And then Scott's son Logan, I think, bought a print or something mm-hmm. from him. And then it was towards the end. We were all kind of leaving. It was kind of towards the end of the Saturday, I think.
Yeah, I think that she had gotten Grell to draw her an image of Mike Blackman from the John Sable series. And he had been signing and doing so much that his right hand was just like done.
Cramped up, yeah.
And so he was drawing it with his left hand, and it still was in that Mike Grell style that looked just like what his right hand would do. I was so flabbergasted by that, just blown away. Yeah, Burns says he couldn't even do that. Hmm. Anyway.
And I got a question on the Joker's girlfriend. Has he ever had a girlfriend up until... This predates Harley Quinn, obviously.
Not to my knowledge. I remember when I was reading this, I thought, Joker with a girlfriend? I thought that was a, you know, early 90s Harley Quinn thing, right? Where he becomes, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of enthralled or curious of Harley Quinn. And that's how that whole relationship started.
Well, there was another book that mentioned Joker's girlfriend, but it was in Elseworlds that took place, you know, years later. Dark Knight Returns, issue 3.
Well, I always thought the Joker was kind of written to be kind of not
asexual.
Or just that he was not interested in it. You know, he's dealing with stuff on a different plan. He is not, that is, relationship is not something that's on his radar.
Right.
He's horrible to Harley Quinn. I mean, he's you know, abusive to her.
Well, he's not too nice to this one either. Yeah, he's gonna shoot her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting. If you look at the very last image of Batman, I guess it's page 8. And he's holding the Joker there. If I remember right, the Joker's five-way revenge, that's virtually the same pose where he, you know, basically telling the Joker he's happy once for pollution because it was the oil slick on the beach that caused the Joker to slip and fall. Hmm. I'm going to have to go look that up now.
Have you guys talked about the Phantom Stranger as a character? Do you like him?
I ask a little bit because I know nothing about him as to what he kind of
represents. I mean, I always looked at him as the poor man's specter, or, you know, the guy that always brings in the heroes to do whatever needs to be done. You know,
that's why I thought he was watcher-like.
God's right hand, he's the pinky.
Well, isn't the Phantom Stranger more powerful than a Spectre?
Well, I mean, the Spectre could stop Superman.
I guess it depends, right? So the Spectre, right, isn't he supposed to be...
Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah, but he's tied to a mortal.
Right.
Jim Corbett.
Whereas the Phantom Stranger, he is immortal.
Right.
And because of a bad action, and I'm trying to remember, he gets a coin or something. Isn't there some, like, Jesus connection with that? He gets a coin and it makes him immortal, and I have to look it up.
Well, I think he has a very convoluted backstory.
Yeah. I remember that in the New 52, they tried to kind of reboot the Phantom Stranger, Pandora, and... Who's the guy without the face?
The Question.
I'll have to Google it, but it was like the Trinity of Evil. It was a miniseries. And kind of reintroducing these characters, and they do go into their backstories.
Well, I know one story possibly is that he's a fallen angel, something like that. So,
aren't they all?
No.
All right, I got a kid down here who's saying he's got a headache. Yeah. So I'm going to bid you guys adieu. Thanks for letting me crash. The 150th.
Yeah, anytime.
And go out and read the Trinity of Evil, New 52. It's pretty good. I think it's only like 6 issues. It's good.
So next we're looking at this character. I don't remember what her name was. The muscle-bound lady?
Miss Majestic or Miss...
Myth, yeah. She looks like Zap from American Gladiators.
Well, this is probably what she's based on. This is her first and only appearance, too. So she's made for this issue. Yeah.
And cool Guy Gardner bringing it all to a stop. Mm-hmm. And then you're not Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman. It's actually an android? Kronos, the Time Thief, with the worst costume ever.
Well, I think he's a... Is he a Gardner Fox creation? He ran up against the Atom, I think. He's an Atom villain.
Yeah.
But yeah, the striped pants are a little... reminds me a little bit of... what's the Marvel character? Not the Joker, not the Jester, not the... Oh, Madcap.
Madcap, yeah.
Madcap, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Madcap was like Marvel's ambush bug.
Mm-hmm.
Or Deadpool.
Or the, was it the Destroyer from Invaders had stripy legs, leggings as well, I think.
Yeah. Hmm. But then you got your Blue Beetle, who it did look in Legends like they're trying to make him jokey, you know. Not bwa-ha-ha jokey, but more like Peter Parker jokey.
I thought that's what he was. I thought he was kind of had that. A kind of wisecracking kind of persona, a lot like Peter Parker.
But he's more of a rich Tony Stark kind of.
But again, I think there's so much of this is... Blue Beetle is in a lot of these issues, and I think it's because they were relaunching
Justice League. Yeah.
That, and I think they were... wrote it down. There were a bunch of new books that were coming out. So that's why it feels like they were like Blue Beetle had just come out, or they're trying to pump him up. And like I said, this cross into Warlord, the Justice League, things like that. So,
yeah, I got to ask a question going back to something from one of the previous issues. You know how we had Cosmic Boy show up in issue 2? And he talked about his girlfriend being stuck in something. We never saw what happened with that. You never even saw his girlfriend, who was Shadow Lass, I believe.
Well, it crosses into his. There were several crossovers into his.
He had his own miniseries. That's right.
Right. Yeah. So it crosses into that. Yeah. So that's probably where. Mm. There's a lot of stuff that if you're not reading the tie-ins, a lot of stuff happens off-panel. Unless you're reading those, you kind of come back. After
you gotta go collect all the books.
Yeah, if you haven't, it's all 22, I think, chapters. 22 chapters, yeah. So that's why it seems a little, if you read just this series, you feel a little lost sometimes because you're coming back like, okay, what happened? You know, what did this person do? They'll mention something. Like the thing with Batman, he mentions something about Catwoman. I don't know what that's about. Mm. Something happened to Catwoman.
Yeah. And I was wrong there. It's not Shadow Lass. It's Night Girl from the Substitute Legion. She only has superpowers at night.
Oh, interesting.
No, I'm not making this up.
It's a day sleeper.
Don't go there.
Oh, I mean, it's not like... Well, I'm not going to say that one from Kick-Ass. Sorry. Mystery Men. Mystery Men.
Right. And we get our first introduction to Dr. Fate, which I didn't realize
Coolest
that he was...
Coolest costume.
It's a cool costume, yeah. I didn't realize... Mm-hmm. And he is... I always thought he was the DC analog of Doctor Strange, I guess, or Doctor Strange is the analog, because I think Doctor Fate came first.
And then there's the Amalgam book, Doctor Strange Fate.
I didn't realize that he was possessed by...
Naboo.
Yeah, because they didn't...
Dominion of the Lords of Order.
Was that in the Black Adam? Was...
Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan... possessed when he put the helmet on? Was he okay? I didn't
trade that.
I wasn't sure.
Chris, do you remember that?
No, they didn't portray it really. Not like
it seemed like he was Dr. Fate when the helmet was off, as opposed to whether he had it on or not.
The best representation I've seen of it is in Injustice 2, Superman takes off the helm of Naboo, and it's completely different than when he's Dr. Fate. Like, it's two different personalities. So, that's like the best I've seen of that portrayed in anything so far. I don't really know if he was portrayed in Justice League Unlimited that much. I don't think so. I think he was there, but just not...
Yeah, he wasn't really shown much.
He was in Brave and the Bold, and he did have a couple episodes in there, but I don't remember, so...
Well, it's revealed later that he kind of retained some of the powers, even if his helmet is off. So it's not a complete complete change. And we get more of the Suicide Squad of Boomerang being outraged because Amanda Waller was apparently going to go back on her word and not release him. But Flag, kind of forces her to take their wristbands off, which I don't know what point they go to the either a neck band or they go to the implanted bomb in the neck instead of just a wrist. At this point, if they disobey him, they're going to lose their arm or their hand. They're not going to lose their life.
Well, it depends on what they're doing. I mean, if Captain Boomerang's picking his nose when they blow that thing off,
if you're scratching your head, or brushing your teeth, you might die.
Is Nigel still around?
I'm still here.
He's still here.
Yep. I'm just following along.
And then
a lot of these, as you say, I didn't read any of these crossovers, so I,
it's a lot of, we get more of the Flash and him kind of, I don't know if it's a kind of a sub theme, but he is struggling with his own legend during this because he's trying to live up to the legend of Barry Allen. And he can't because during Crisis, he got hit by some ray and he's slower than normal.
But he was dying during Crisis.
Right, but
his speed was killing him.
The ray fixed him.
Yeah,
made him slower.
Well, it freezed him where he was, basically no faster than the speed of sound.
Right.
But as the different writers were coming on the Flash book, after Mike Barron... There was, I believe, Jeff Loeb or William Messner Loeb's. I forget which one it was. And then Mark Waid eventually got on there and straightened it all out. But he had a block that basically, if he thought that Barry would be disappointed in him, he would be weaker or slower.
Mm.
And once he was able to get past all that, then he was the fastest man alive. Whew. And so we got these giant dingoes running around, the warhounds or whatever they are.
Yeah,
and they actually look like the dingoes or chihuahuas.
They're
giant ones.
Well, they look like they look like Raj 2000 dogs.
Yeah.
Very very chrome.
And then Darkseid's playing with another Superman action figure.
Mm-hmm.
Where's he getting all these?
And he breaks it.
Yep.
No longer met.
Yeah. All right.
Well, let me let me kind of read these three very quickly. I'm just gonna go through them 1, 2, 3. These are the tie-in stories that take place after issue 4, but Byrne worked on them either as a writer or writer artist. So I thought they were worth mentioning, and it kind of gives a little. It's all Superman. It's a little Superman side story because at the end of this, he says he's going to bring. He shoots his Omega beams, and he's going to bring Superman to Apocalypse. So after this issue, we go to Superman Volume 2, Number 3. And it's called Legends from the Dark Side. And I'll read this real quickly. Lois Lane arranges for an interview with G. Gordon Godfrey to find out some more background information on him, but Godfrey shies away from personal details and continues to spew his anti-hero propaganda. Meanwhile, Clark Kent is racing through the streets of Metropolis trying to avoid being struck by twin laser beams that appear to be specifically targeting him. Due to a presidential order suspending Superman activity, Clark refuses to change into Superman. He dives into the sewer where he hopes to avoid the death rays, but the twin beams strike him, transporting him to the planet Apocalypse. Darkseid is standing in his personal palace, along with the Phantom Stranger. The ruler of Apocalypse is disappointed that his teleportation of Mega Beams brought him this normal human rather than his intended target, Superman. He blasts Kirk out the window and presumably to his doom. The Phantom Stranger sits idly by doing nothing, knowing that the fall will not harm Superman. Superman lands in the ruins of Armageddon, where he is put upon by the maniacal, diseased citizens known as the Hunger Dogs. He fights past them and dons a grimy cloak so as to blend in. He finds a group of Darkseid shock troopers preparing to publicly execute a woman named Amazing Grace. Superman frees her from her tormentors and sends the shock troopers scattering. One of them summons a giant armored adversary known as the Pacifier to attack Superman. Superman tears the Pacifier armor open, revealing a slimy alien Glommer. The Glommer is a parasite and it latches onto Superman's face. As the Man of Steel struggles with the monster, they both fall into one of the nearby fire pits. Darkseid laughs as he watches the scene unfold. That continues into Adventures of Superman number 426. One of the Hunger Dogs recovers Superman's body from the fire pits of Apocalypse and brings it to a group of lowlies in Armageddon. One of their leaders, Amazing Grace, steps out of the crowd and helps to revive Superman. Superman seems to have lost a significant portion of his memory due to falling into the fire pit. Amazing Grace proclaims he as their savior. The Hunger Dogs rally behind Superman and feel that he is the one that will lead them to victory and overthrow Darkseid. Darkseid witnesses the spectacle and sends a squad of parademons to break up the rabble. Superman leads the Hunger Dogs and they make a strong show of force. They all begin crowding in the streets and they feel courage and hope for the first time in years. But their strength and victory is short-lived. A second, more massive wave of parademons swoops down and obliterates thousands of Hunger Dogs. This is all according to Darkseid's plan. He wanted the Savior to build them up to the moment of supreme hope, just so he could knock them back down, the defeat of the spirit as well as the body. Amazing Grace reveals herself to not be the leader of the Hunger Dogs' resistance, but a willing accomplice of Darkseid. She uses her hypnotic powers to sway Superman to her side. After the slaughter, Grace brings Superman to Darkseid's palace. Darkseid smiles and regards the Savior as his son. And that continues into Action Comics number 586, The Champion. Light Ray and Orion travel to Apocalypse to confront Superman, who is now brainwashed into thinking he is the son of Darkseid. Darkseid restoring Superman's knowledge of his own powers, the Man of Steel goes to attack Light Ray and Orion, mainly focusing on Orion, who reveals to Superman who the real son of Darkseid is. Meanwhile, Amazing Grace tries to seduce Light Ray with her powers of mesmerizing speech in an attempt to kill him, but fails as he uses his light powers to stun her. Orion's mother box restores Superman's memory as well as his original costume, and he flies into a rage. Darkseid, who was about to punish Grace for her failure, realizes that Superman is no longer under his control. He uses his Omega beams, and they lie all around the city, chasing Superman. Surfman leads them all the way back to Darkseid and dodges, and they hit him. Darkseid, injured, begins burning Superman with his mega beams. Superman breaks free from them and attacks Darkseid, pummeling him. He knocks Darkseid across the room and flies towards him again. Darkseid opens a boom tube in front of him, and the Man of Steel flies through it and goes back to Earth. So that's the little side story of Superman on Apocalypse that is kind of, you hear him talk about it either the next issue or the sixth issue. He says Darkseid captured him, and that's why he disappeared for a while. So now we can go on to issue number 5. That's Nigel or Kirk, right?
Yeah. That's me.
Did we talk about the cover of 4?
I don't think we did.
No.
I'm trying to pull it up again.
It's a nice one. It's
Godfrey.
Yeah, burning the other.
Everybody
heroes.
Burning an effigy.
Effigies of the heroes.
For some reason, that image of Superman with all the fire where his head would be reminds me of the Christmas issue they did pre-Crisis, where it was a very, very old Superman with beard and everything standing in front of the fortress. Anyway,
it's a good picture.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice. Those torches he's holding remind me of the candles or torches or whatever they were in Conan at the end of the film. All of James Earl Jones' followers, I can't remember his name now, the character's name, are holding these large, like wax candles, but they're kind of like torches or candles or something. That's what that reminds me of. All right, Kirk, take it away.
All righty. I have to confess, I found my copy of Legends number 5 online on one of the online databases. And one by one, they are going out. They're being snuffed out. I'm glad that I found this one I did, because when I went back to read the other issues, the website was gone.
Oops.
I don't know if legally somebody's snuffing them out, but I can't find things online anymore. So, just by the by. All right. What was the AI that you were saying you were using to write?
David was using Copilot.
Okay.
It's a Microsoft add-on.
Okay. apparently I used the wrong program, because it's DiePilot, and it's a good deal shorter than... Oh, I'm making this up. This is all mine. Okay, Legends number 5 of 6 from March of 1987. Its cover price is 75 cents. The cover is black with colorful costumes discarded around Captain Marvel, who stands in the middle. Billy Batson is haunted by the news of Mega Man's death by lightning. He feels that it's his fault, but decides to transform to CM anyway. Let Slip the Dogs of War is the title. By the way, you recognize where these titles are coming from? Cry Havoc
Shakespeare.
And the Dogs of War?
Yeah.
It's Shakespeare, yes.
I thought it was Star Trek 6.
Sorry?
Yeah.
I thought it was Star Trek 6.
Star Trek 6.
Yes, that too. John Ostrander, plotter. Len Wein, scripter. John Byrne, penciler. Carl Kessel, inker. Steve Tainite, letterer. Tom Zucco, colorist. And Mike Gold, editor. Captain Marvel is engulfed by the rioting mob until they're suddenly frozen. Off panel, a voice says, "Captain Marvel, you are needed," and they vanish. In Star City, Black Canary is rounding up a few of the Laser League when she is similarly taken. In L.A., Sunspot, who looks exactly like him, is posting when Guy Gardner intervenes. He makes a leak in the suspended oil tanker, which drains onto him, and this enrages Sunspot. To free himself from Green Lantern's lariat, Sunspot blasts his own foot, and then Guy is taken as well. We do not see what happens to the suspended Sunspot.
Blue Beetle is returning from a fight against Kronos when he's accused of being a peeping Tom, and then he is also taken. Batman is on patrol and reasons that G. Gordon Godfrey is involved in something supernatural when he's taken. Likewise, in New York City, Changeling and Flash are double-teaming the crowd with warhounds, but are also taken by the suspended stranger. However, they'd been surrounded along with Captain Boomerang, who destroyed a couple of warhounds that had people in them. He, Captain Boomerang, is captured by the mob due to his long scarf, and the mob resolves to take him to Godfrey. In the meantime, Inkling and Flash are gone. Superman is attending a conference in the Oval Office with President Ronald Reagan, who states the other heroes have disobeyed his restraining order. Then Dr. Fate suddenly appears and states that he listens to, quote, a higher authority. He and Superman are both taken as they vanish. Meantime, Godfrey is whipping up the crowd when they bring Captain Boomerang before him. On the televised news feed, Boomerang said they'd better release him because he has friends who'd better get to him right now. Amanda Waller recognizes the threat of exposure of Task Force X and discusses with Colonel Flagg that they must rescue or eliminate Boomerang in not very veiled terms. She leaves the choice up to Flagg, who is distressed over the conflict that he recognizes. Godfrey is addressing a large crowd before the Lincoln Memorial when Dr. Fate appears and repeats that they both know who the authority behind this is. He gestures that he has supporters who seek justice, and they are Legion II. The assembled New Justice League square off before Godfrey. The scene is being observed on Apocalypse by Darkseid and the Phantom Stranger. Darkseid states either way the heroes go, he wins. But Phantom Stranger says, not so fast. And finally, in Gotham City, an injured Jason Todd, who is watching the TV news feed from a hospital bed. He's apparently got a private room because there's nobody else around. He has a cast on his right leg and right forearm. Half of his face is bandaged. But he reasons if Batman and the others are making a final stand, he shouldn't remain in comparative safety. He removes his bathrobe and his eye bandage as he dresses as Robin. On a crutch, he hobbles down the hallway to make his way to the fight. Back on Apocalypse, Darkseid laughs as we prepare for the finale next issue.
Nicely done. I like the sound effects, Kurt.
Like the tinklings. Yeah,
sorry, I wanted something that would imply more of a transporter, but this is the only thing that my daughter could come up for me. Just this little wind chime. So,
well, that sounds more Dr. Fate-like. It wouldn't be. Yeah. It sounds more mystical. So I think it worked fine.
That's what she said. I did.
I have one question first is, how does Robin get those briefs over that cast? He's dressed as Robin. I don't think that's going to happen. Unless they're very stretchy.
He must have already had some of that on. Yeah.
Well, I wonder who it is that took off his mask and put him in the hospital without figuring out, hey, aren't you the ward of Bruce? What are you doing dressed up?
That's a good question. That's a good question, because who put that there?
Yeah. Oh, and Kirk, on page 6, I missed when you moved on in your synopsis.
Yeah.
And you said where we see Sunspot, who looks exactly like, and I missed the name that you said.
Oh,
Jim Shooter.
Right. Yeah, I'd missed the name. What I heard you say, who looks, incredibly like, and I missed the name.
He's supposed to be Starbrand. Yeah.
Jim Shooter. Yeah.
Now, a little bit of background on this, and I don't have a lot on it, so take this for what it's worth. I understand that this whole story was plotted by John Ostrander, scripted by Len Wein, and John Byrne was the penciler. But that John, this is what I've read, John Byrne went off script, expanding the interaction between Guy Gardner and this Sunspot character from 2 pages to 4 pages, and did this all on his own. Nobody knew it was going this way, but he had to have then sent those pages on to the letterer and the inker and the colorist and other people. Must have recognized it. And they all cooperated, and it got all the way to be published. But everybody, when this came out, was talking about it. Oh, did you see this? He shot himself in the foot. And the message was not lost on the fans. We got it big time. We thought we saw exactly what he was doing. And nothing came of it. There was no lawsuit. There was no recall of the book. It just, it faded into obscurity. But I remember it vividly, though I could not tell you which issue it was in. I thought it was just brilliant. And so
I didn't pick up on it. I just thought it was odd that they were this, because this is the only appearance of this character, that he was given so much screen time, basically, for a throwaway character. Except now I realize...
I wield the ultimate power. The power to create a new universe.
Right there. That expression.
His new universe was probably 3 or 4 months old at the time this was out.
Say that again?
I said the new universe was about 3 or 4 months old when this was coming out. So this is kind of running concurrently with all the new universe stuff.
Okay. I was not aware of that, but I didn't follow the new universe at all.
Oh, are you kidding me? I picked all of them up for the first 4 or 5 issues, and then some like Starbrand, I collected all of them, and DP7, I collected all because I liked that book. Some of the rest I dropped pretty quick because they were pretty bad.
Well, in hindsight, I don't know how true this is, but I'll get on my soapbox just a little bit. In hindsight, at this time, Marvel was being, I won't say threatened, but they were at least worried that Jack Kirby was suing for all the Marvel characters that he had a hand in creating. And they were pretty confident that they were going to win, that he didn't have much of a chance. But clearly somebody in management said, if he wins, we lose half of our properties. We had better be ready. So somebody had better start creating new characters, a new universe. And I think that's basically where Shooter came from. I don't have it from him. I don't have anything that confirms this. But I believe Shooter was changing all the costumes of all the Marvel characters as quickly as he could, so that, quote unquote, everything old is new again. That was the advertising campaign for that, and they changed everything. The new Centurion armor on Iron Man. They changed Captain America to the Captain. They changed Thor to, I don't know, a bearded armored guy. Everything shifted just enough so that Marvel's lawyers could then point to them and say, these are not the same characters or the images that Jack Kirby drew. These are our characters, and they have evolved. All right, I'll get off.
Well, the
Joe
well, the
fix
new,
it.
The new universe, also the other gimmick of it was, it took place in real time. It was supposed to be like a month would take place in the books in between issues. I don't think they stuck with that very long, but that was their idea when they first...
And it was the world outside your window again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at what... what's the character that Kirby created? Was it Funky Flashman?
Yes.
Which is supposed to be, obviously, supposed to be Stan Lee, and nothing ever came of that. You know, there was no suing or anything of that happening.
And here's the irony of it all, is that Byrne took over the book The Star Brand... And they were forced to change the character Debbie the Duck and say that she had a different name because the girl that it was based on was threatening to sue, a friend of Shooter's.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I don't know that one. But...
Yeah, we came across that when we did our coverage of Starbrand.
I never could quite follow the storyline where that was going. I may have picked up a couple of issues. And you say that Byrne was on the book at some point.
He picked it on
issue 11.
And then finished it up.
He finished the new universe up.
Yeah.
Basically it all out.
They had the big crossover, which was World War III or something, where they had where they blew up Pittsburgh. That became the pit. And then they kind of had stories after that. And then if you read Quasar, he actually goes to the new universe and meets those characters in his own book.
No idea.
Yeah. This was a lot of setup on this. It's mostly Fate collecting all the heroes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
the expression that I've been using to tell people about this is, if you've ever seen the Blues Brothers, where they say, "Hey, man, we're getting the band back together.
Yep. There you go.
This issue. He's collecting the heroes. They're going to be presented, well, they were presented at the end, as a team that he assembled for whatever reason. I don't know who Dr. Fate is, but they're going to get launched, although I didn't realize it, as of the next issue. But that's Nigel's story. And I was right there for it because everybody kept telling me how funny that book was. So I started buying it. And it was very cleverly written. It was a stitch.
What book is that? Is that the...
The Bois?
Oh, I've never read that. I've always heard that referred to that, but I've never read any of those issues.
It's because many of the characters laugh, big, deep belly laughs. And, you know, Guy Gardner, Needles, I won't go down this rabbit hole.
It was genuinely funny.
Guy Gardner needles the hell out of Batman, who is sort of trying to get control over this motley crew, and Batman doesn't pay him any mind. And finally, by about issue 6, it comes to a confrontation, and Batman takes him out with one punch. Just one punch.
I think I've seen
that. Not quite out of the blue, but decks him. And the rest of the team either witnessed it or they were out of the room when it happened. But everybody keeps saying, "What did I miss? What did I miss?" And so it kind of becomes a focal point and a turning point after the first 6 issues, as Guy Gardner is out cold and they go out on their mission or whatever they do. And he's out cold for the entire issue, starts to wake up on the floor. Oh, my aching head. Lifts his head up, bangs it on the underside of the control panel of whatever their watchtower control panel is, smacks himself and is knocked out again for a second time. And then when he comes to, his entire personality has changed. Instead of being an asshat,
he's Mr. Rogers,
sweetest guy, and everybody thinks it's an act at first, but he's completely changed. And that's as far down the rabbit hole as I'm going to go with that series.
Hey, Tim, you do have it digitally.
I've got it. I've never just sat down and read it. I think I got it from you.
There's a couple of crossovers where they introduce some thinly veiled Avengers, call them by different names. I got to tell you, though, they were veiled enough that I didn't recognize what they were doing until somebody else told me. I'm not good at picking up those things, but
those characters came from earlier storylines in the original Justice League.
Okay.
So, well, if you ever read the Authority, the first 12. No, not the first 12, because that's is that Warren Ellis that wrote it. So remember when Frank Quitely and I think Mark Millar took over the book, which is issue 12, 13. And Millar has a character in there that's basically Jack Kirby. It's this wizened little old man who creates all these characters, and they're all analogs of the Avengers, and they fight the Authority. And he's like this all-powerful creator that can just summon or create these characters like that. And there's a Iron Man, there's a Thor, there's a There's a Captain America. There's a Hulk. And they're pretty blatant copies of those characters. But it's all kind of, if you ever read The Authority, it's a little darker humor in that.
Yeah, I had heard it was dark.
Yeah. All right, so what else we got to say about five, other than we made fun of Jim Shooter?
Yeah.
And we got Captain Mark. Get Captain Marvel back.
Yeah, collected. Yeah, collect all the heroes up.
Yep. And another recap of issue one. We get that again.
Yeah.
But there is a great image on page 20, and that's all the heroes brought together by Dr. Fate.
Yes.
And they all look ready to go.
That splash page.
This issue also has that great shot of Captain Marvel finally coming back into his power.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And that's just like one of the greatest Captain Marvel images I've ever seen.
And I think you can tell in that face where Byrne is trying to differentiate him from Superman.
Mm.
It's Squinty Fawcett character. Yeah.
His mouth's a little different. That's a great. And as soon as he becomes Shazam, because now he has the wisdom of Solomon, he realizes he's been tricked the whole time.
Yep.
And that he was not responsible for.
Well, that image of his face at the top of page 4 looks more like an Archie Comics character. It looks like Reggie or
someone. A little bit.
Do you know who he was originally created to look like, or who the model was for Captain Marvel many, many decades ago?
Well, I know that Alex Ross used Fred McMurray.
There you go. Yes.
As his, but I don't think that's who they used initially.
No, I've heard people talk about it in letters pages. I believe that it was Fred McMurray, who we would know either in the Kane Mutiny, Double Indemnity, or on TV as My Three Sons.
Yep. I could see the era of Double Indemnity. He's young enough. I could see that, but not when he gets much older.
He was also wasn't he the professor that made Flubber?
Yes, yes, you're right.
He is Flubber.
Yep.
The absent-minded professor.
Yep.
That's right.
Great stuff.
All right, do we want to finish up with Nigel, who has the Fiesta Resistance?
Oh. Okay. Yep. Here we go, then. So, first of all, before I get into the actual comic, other things that were on sale published at the same time. I've got Marvel Tales number 198, which was a reprint of Marvel Team Up 63, I believe, which was Spider-Man and Iron Fist. Doomsday Squad number 6 from Fantagraphics. He was the artist on that.
Yeah, those are reprints of Doomsday Plus One.
Yeah.
That was a reprint of Doomsday Plus One, issue 6. Action really Comics. Really good coloring on that.
Yes.
Action Comics number 587, Cityscape. He was the writer and penciler on that one. Superman number 4, Bloodsport. Again, Bernie's writer and penciler. And Who's Who in Star Trek number 2, which is a bit like it's kind of like an a hot move for Star Trek, I guess. Yeah. And Byrne and Austin drew Harry Mudd in that issue, and Byrne also drew Sarek in the same issue.
Oh, so Khan was in the first one then, huh?
Must be. These were the only two that were mentioned for Byrne in Star Trek number 2.
I didn't realize he did photo referencing for those. So when I originally saw his image of Khan, I was like, oh my gosh, he must really be a Trek fan. Just the amount of detail in Khan's character.
All right, so on to Legends number 6, cover dated April of 1987. 75 cents cover price, or 40 pence in the UK. 32 pages, larger than the average issue. 32 pages, 30 pages of story, 2 pages of letters, no ads.
Nice.
Same team, well, mostly the same team for the final part. Plotter, John Ostrander. Scripter, Len Wein. Penciler, John Byrne. Now, 2 inkers for this issue. Inkers, Carl Kessel, from pages 1 to 20. And Dennis Janke, pages 21 to 30. Letterer, Steve Haney. Colorist, Carl Gafford, back again. Editor, Mike Gold. And I assume editor-in-chief still Dick Giordano. And the title of this final part is aptly Finale. Darkseid boosts... that's a good start. Darkseid boasts of victory to the Phantom Stranger and the Earth is going to crumble. He sees everything going according to plan. Glorious Godfrey leads an anti-hero rally at the Lincoln Memorial. Captain Marvel retired because he was convinced that he murdered Macro Man. See Legends 1. Brimstone destroyed and humiliated the Justice League of America. See JLA 258, Firestorm 55, and Legends number 2. President Reagan issued an executive order banning all superheroes, including Superman. Again, see Legends number 2. Darkseid believes humanity will rise up and destroy their heroes. However, Phantom Stranger suggests Darkseid has ignored a crucial factor which will prove his own downfall. At Godfrey's rally, the people have begun to burn superhero effigies. Gathering to stop him are Batman, Black Canary, Blue Beetle, Captain Marvel, Changeling, Dr. Fate, The Flash, Guy Gardner, John Jones, and Superman. Godfrey orders his warhounds to attack the heroes, who have enough raw strength and powers to defeat them, but they are forced to pull their punches because of the innocent people inside the metallic creatures. Using their skills, the heroes disable the warhounds, but Godfrey opens a stargate to unleash a host of parademons on Washington, D.C. The heroes spring into action to rescue innocents or confront the parademons. Dr. Fate tries to reason with the angry mob, but his helmet is taken from his head by a parademon, negating some of his powers, and he's forced to fly away before the mob can get a hold of him. Godfrey, feeling pleased with himself, leaves the mob and goes to where he is holding the hostage Captain Boomerang. Godfrey questions his captive for information about the Suicide Squad. On a rooftop above, Rick Flagg and the Suicide Squad watch this scene. They have orders to rescue Boomerang or kill him before he reveals their secrets. Deadshot tries to shoot Boomerang, but Flagg stops him. Flagg then orders Enchantress to use her magic powers on Godfrey's 2 warhounds, which she does, disabling them, and Godfrey flees. Bronze Tiger leaps after Godfrey, but when he corners him, Godfrey uses his mind control to make Tiger into another slave. Flagg and the Suicide Squad rescue Boomerang, and Flagg punches Boomerang in the face for trying to get out of his obligation. He then tells him he is now a permanent member of Task Force X. Meanwhile, Batman tracks down a gang of thugs and takes them out. Guy Gardner flies after warhounds who have gone crazy and are attacking innocents in the streets. As he smashes one of the warhounds using the power of his Green Lantern ring, he is watched by a figure in the shadows. The figure decides to reveal themselves and rushes from a dark alley to confront another warhound. Hoisting it above her head with godlike strength, Wonder Woman announces her arrival in man's world, and another powerful blow destroys the warhound. See Wonder Woman, Volume 2, Number 8. Guy Gardner is impressed. And trying to hit on Diana, he exclaims, "Not bad, babe," to which the Amazon tells him she is nobody's babe. Elsewhere, masked gunmen under Godfrey's influence attack the White House. They blow a hole in the wall of the Oval Office and shoot the president, but their bullets bounce off his chest. The president then slugs the gunmen before changing into his true form of the Martian Manhunter. The real president thanks him, and the Martian Manhunter flies off to rejoin the fight. The president then rescinds his executive order banning superheroes, effective immediately. Above the city, Superman and Captain Marvel battle parademons. They are able to round them up and throw them back through the Stargate portal that spawned them. The Flash, Changeling, Blue Beetle, Black Canary, and Batman deal with rioters in the street. But as it seems to be getting out of hand, the other heroes return to regroup as the angry mob surrounds them on every side. Godfrey gives the order to kill the heroes. And on Apocalypse, Darkseid gloats. Suddenly, they are interrupted by local children who form a barrier around the heroes. Robin, the boy wonder, arrives in his crippled state and helps the children to reason with the mob. Lisa Sutton tells the crowd they should believe in the heroes, which angers Godfrey, who slaps her hard across the face. The crowd turns on Godfrey when they see him hitting a child, and feeling that he is losing control, Godfrey puts on the helmet of fate to increase his powers. This proves his undoing, as the helmet scrambles his brain and renders him unconscious. The crowd are freed from their brainwashing as Dr. Fate takes back his helmet. Bronze Tiger, now also free of the mind control, quickly slips away. Crisis over, Dr. Fate says there is need for a brotherhood of heroes, which Wonder Woman also echoes. Batman, Black Canary, Blue Beetle, Captain Marvel, Martian Manhunter all agree to forming the new Justice League, with Superman offering his services when needed. When the Man of Steel turns to ask Wonder Woman of her decision, they find she's gone. Batman states that they will see Wonder Woman again, as she is the very essence of the term hero. Back on Apocalypse, Phantom Stranger says that Darkseid never understood how important legends are to the human psyche. Instead of destroying the concept, Darkseid simply reaffirmed them. Despite the setback, Darkseid still believes humanity is destined to fall before him. Phantom Stranger looks over the assembled heroes and says he's proud to stand in their company as legends. The end? No. The beginning.
Nicely done. Very nicely done. I do have to ask, you both, you and Kirk say Darkseid. Is it Darkseid or Darkseid?
Argument.
Well, I was never sure, but so I always read it as Darkseid.
When I was a kid, I read it as Darkseid, but when they started the superpowers on Super Friends, it was Darkseid.
Right.
So I just
rolled with it.
Yeah.
I thought it might have been Magneto.
I only read his name. I'd never seen any of the TV series where he might have appeared. And so because of the spelling, I read it as Dark Seed.
Yeah. Gotta say, Kessel's Inc.'s much better than Junkers.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I remember when I was first reading it, and when I got to page, which more likely be 21, yeah, where Superman and Captain Marvel are fighting the parademons. And then I looked back at the page next to it, and I thought, there's something different about this. You know,
well, I'm also not a fan of Gafford's coloring versus Zuko's.
Hmm.
You can look at Darkseid's image from the first page versus his image from the first issue, and it is less malevolent. It's just, it looks like a drunk relative that's lost a lot of weight.
A drunk relative.
Well, yeah, we just had Thanksgiving, so I'm just remembering.
The second half inkings needs a little heavier line. Yeah. Just a little light on the inking.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded definition. Me of the inking that was done in the Avengers. Remember Mike McClellan's inking? Very thin lined.
Mm. But you can get away with that. It just depends, but this doesn't work as well.
Yeah. But that, page 21 especially just looks so different after the previous pages. Yeah. Some of the other pages later on get a little bit better, but you can tell the difference.
Well, I mean, look at on page 21, if you look at Captain Marvel, and you've got a color shift in the bottom of the page to the top of the page, and it's split by his cloak, his cape, and it just looks like it was done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get the same on the panel above it. You go from kind of a medium yellow to a pale yellow to pale yellow to blue.
It's really sloppy. And Superman's hair is really sloppy. But, still, bad burn art still better than good root canal.
True. Well, it's late in the game, but we get our introduction of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Into...
And there was never anything, not even a hint, that we were going to see her in the previous issues.
Mm. No. She's on this front cover of this one, but that's it.
And you're like, what? You know? Okay.
But that's because, I guess that's because of what was going on at the time in the Wonder Woman issue, in the title Wonder Woman, which had just been kind of revamped by George Perez. And that's why I gave this sort of reference to Wonder Woman number 8, because this battle, it's kind of covered in that as well, just on a couple of pages.
Well, that was what I think that's what I know this is. This story, from what I read, it's very, I like it. It's finally remembered. And the artwork is great. But I think what hampers it is the fact that it's trying to set up other books that are coming after it. Like, I think the Suicide Squad is in this quite a bit because they're setting up that book.
Yeah, because that's,
I think that hurts it. And some other things that instead of just having a nice, concise story that has some tie-ins, they're trying too hard to set up these other things, and it gets in the way of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I understand why they did it, but I think it would have been, and to your point of it's coming right on the heels of Crisis, and that shook everything up, and I know I read this when it came off but I wasn't a DC reader. So I can just imagine what it must have been like if you're a hardcore DC reader to go through Crisis and then have everything just turned upside down and changed, and you're trying to keep up with what's going on.
Yeah.
Is it your impression that this book
this particular issue, the sixth one, with so few ads and so many pages that they're trying to position this as the starting point for all these other books, that if you only get one, this is the one to get?
Yeah, because, I mean, you've got Blue Beetle, who starts a 2-year run on a book. The Flash, who had his series, the Wally West one, went for years. Teen Titans have been around. But Black Canary joined into Justice League, Guy Gardner, Captain Marvel, and Batman. Now, this, it's funny, you almost get a smile from this Batman here, but you never got a smile from Batman in the Bwahaha era. And Dr. Fate. No, good series, and I want to get Christopher's opinion on it, but he had to step out. It's funny because he had just read and kind of studied Ephesians in the Bible, and you've got that Ephesians quote on the last page, so I'm kind of interested in his take on that, but he's out.
Well, I will say it's like superheroes are apparently like Santa Claus. Only children believe in them. And, you know, it's like in Peter Pan. Once you grow up, you forget about childhood things. But
not us, not anymore. Never, no?
Never. Careful, Tim. You're awfully close to Christmas. You don't want to go there.
That's true. Well, I will say this, because this was my, like I said, I had never read the DC Universe, and all my knowledge was from Super Friends. So when I fell burned to DC and I read this, this is my introduction to so many that I didn't know any of these characters. So it is a good jumping on point, if you're new to the DC Universe.
It's interesting because I'm looking, you know, at that digital copy from the 30-year later collection. And there is another cover here that it says Legends, the Collection. And it's got a shot of Superman and Captain Marvel, John Jones, Dr. Fate, Guy Gardner, Blue Beetle, Changeling as a Bird, Flash, Black Canary, Wonder Woman. And it had to have been done very recently, probably around 2012? And it's just, they look so different. I'm not a fan of it, actually.
Are they, on that one that you're talking about, are they coming straight at you?
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed
Batman's
to
in the
like,
bottom center.
As opposed to the cover of number 6, where they're kind of coming on from the left
and going to
Yeah, I've seen that one that you're talking about, where they're running straight forward, because I thought, oh, that's like Legend 6.
Yeah, well, it's obvious that Byrne drew it and inked it.
Yeah.
But yeah. And
So yeah, it's we're close to our 3-hour mark. So
yeah,
I know it's late for some, it's early for others. We have any final thoughts on this issue 6 and the series overall?
Well, I really like the series, and I'm glad that, you know, we get to cover it, especially for 150th episode. That's an accomplishment. And it's not often that we get to do a show this long anymore.
Mm-hmm. And almost had almost everybody on.
Yeah.
John, we missed out on John.
Yep.
But I understand. It's hard. It's that time of year.
But, you know, it's when we do an issue, whenever we do a book or anything, and we give it the kind of look that we have here, that we actually see the little cracks. And, you know, we see them when we're talking about them here.
But did you ever notice him before today? I mean, did you ever really notice the difference in the inking or the coloring?
I didn't, but I did not. I don't think I've read this since I originally read it back in the 80s,
86, 87. I found myself reading every couple of years.
I think it has the same problem with most miniseries major that have tie-in, major crossovers, that if you don't read everything, it feels a little jarry. You know, you're jumping in every the main story, you're jumping in every issue, and so much has happened off panel that it's a little herky-jerky. You know,
this one wasn't as bad as Crisis was in that regard.
No,
I was going to say you had to read the other books, or you were completely lost.
Yeah. I mean, I only collected this, the main six issues, and I enjoyed reading it, even though I didn't have any of the, you know, the other issues that spun off. And I don't know. I mean, like you say, it revealed some gaps with regards to certain parts of the story if you didn't go off on the, you know, and get the other issues. But I didn't think it didn't seem to distract me too much from the main story, probably because I didn't read any of the DC, so it's like, you know, I didn't feel I was missing such things as Legion and Suicide Squad, because I didn't know really who they were in the first place, you know.
Yeah, I think I collected the Suicide Squad, but I didn't read it until about 10, 15 years later. Mm-hmm. And I did collect Cosmic Boys series, but while I had all four issues, I only read the first one, and I just couldn't get through it, you know. It didn't interest me.
Yeah,
I remember reading this when I got it off the stand. I wasn't lost. I could tell what was going on.
Yeah.
But it's not until you kind of start to analyze it that you start to see stuff that's missing. But I think just as a story, you can pick it up and enjoy it. One, the artwork, it's worth reading just for the artwork alone.
Yeah. I think I'm going to say the main thing I think I miss now, now that we've done this show, is where you filled in, Tim, with those three
synopsis
from the Superman's comics. Yeah, because
that's a good story. Those are worth collecting.
I've never seen those at all. And I'd forgotten about that he said at the end of issue four that Darkseid said he was going to pull Superman to back to Apocalypse. Because, of course, with just these issues, you never see any more of that,
right,
do you?
You don't.
And the next time you see, Superman's back again. Yeah.
Well, I think in the previous issue when Dr. Fate was collecting everyone, he has a throwaway line that says, well, Darkseid grabbed me yesterday or today or something, like he'd been gone a day.
Right.
And that explains those issues.
Hmm.
I think I've got those digitally, Nigel. I can send them to you. They're worth reading. It's a pretty good little story.
Oh, yeah, if you don't mind, then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've got them on my list to try and get. The action
Byrne does,
comics.
He does the... I think The Adventures of Superman, he just writes that one. He is, help me out, Brian, who's the artist on that?
On which?
On Adventures of Superman.
Adventures of Superman.
Jerry Ordway.
Yeah, sorry, Jerry Ordway. The artwork's great. It's just not Bernard.
Mm.
Well, I think we've covered everything we need
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, getting late for some of us here. If you want to talk to us, if you want to let us know what you thought or how you felt about this, or just want to share with us your own memories of reading Legends back in the day, or if you read it yesterday, let us know. First and foremost, on our Facebook page, we'd love for everybody to hear what you have to say. But if you want to write us directly, you can send us an email to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's gottagetburned@gmail.com. And we'd love to get a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Come join us on Facebook. Just have fun at the party. 10 years, this will be our 10th year, and we got a lot of fun things planned.
Yep.
Anybody want to take us out?
I will. I want to thank everybody for coming on to this show, everybody that has contributed. I'm glad David could pop in. I know it's hard for him to join us, but I'm always grateful to anybody who can show up. And this is, you know, not like we're getting paid for this. This is something we do just because we love doing it.
The labor of love.
It's hard to plan, especially across, what, 5 time zones or whatever we're across. But I want to take time to thank Brian for this whole show was his idea. If not for Brian, there would be no Third Degree Burn, because he's the one that came to me and said, hey, we should do a show on John Byrne because there isn't one. And I said, okay. I've never podcast before, but we can try it. And 10 years later, we're, you know, it's just two idiots and we still seem to know what we're doing.
Yep. So,
and we picked up a motley crew along the way with Kirk and David and John. And last but not least, Nigel. Now we've gone international. So I can't thank anybody for everybody who's involved in it. And I look forward to
Chris.
Chris is our intern.
Yep. He's our mascot.
And look forward to the shows we've got coming next year. So again, everybody, just thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Kirk, got something to say?
Oh, good night, folks.
No pearls of wisdom from Kirk.
I think he's ready to go.
I know. I don't blame you. It's late for Kirk.
He's on the East Coast.
Okay. Well, for Third Degree Burn, again, I want to thank all of our listeners and everybody on the show today. So for Third Degree Burn, I am Tim Elliott.
I'm Kirk Greenfield.
I'm Nigel Spink.
I'm Brian Hughes. And Chris Hughes was here too, but he's gone to bed now.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.